morning and welcome everyone. Today is July 19th, 2017. It is 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for our weekly business session. Welcome everyone. We'll start, as we always do, with the Pledge of Allegiance. Please rise.
Yes, sir.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We've got a pretty important agenda here today. A couple of different items. We've got a public hearing, and then we're going to go into our administrative actions, review those, take public comment as item number three, and then come back and take action on the administrative calendar before moving into the consent calendar. It's a pretty good time to take your cell phones and put them on silent or vibrate. We've got a couple presentations, and I wouldn't interrupt those. Like I said, you'll have an opportunity to speak in two sections here today because we have a public hearing. There'll be public comment, but only on that specific element on item number one. Item number three affords you the opportunity of 3 minutes to speak on any subject you like. And we'll just ask for your name and general locale of address. So at 9:02, we'll open the public hearing. I'd entertain a motion to read the first reading of Ordinance 2017-001 by title only.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries 3-0. So the public hearing for the first reading of Ordinance Number 2017-001, an ordinance amending the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code, Ordinance 94-4, as originally adopted and subsequently amended to implement certain changes relating to new definitions, creating and adding new sections, 72.060.C and 72.6060.D, clarifying accessory structure standards, 73.030.C, prescribing composition of walls, fences, and screens, 77.010 and 77.020 lighting, 83.020.C, setting limits for grade and fill, amending the text of 72.020A.A, structures, and 73.030.A.2, and 73.030.B.2, fences, and finally 75.060.E, restricting exterior lighting. Second reading is scheduled for August 3rd, 2017, and we have Ms. Meltzer, our Community Development Director / Planning Director, to lead us through this item today.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, as Commissioner Hare stated, Julie Schmelzer, Director of Community Development for Josephine County. I'm going to go through and summarize the highlights of Ordinance 2017-001. For those of you that have it in front of you, I just want to let you know for ease of reading, the things that will be omitted are crossed out in your handout, and for those that are being added, would be underlined. Just to make it easier to understand and follow along. So I want to go back and tell you where this all began. On June 8th, 2017, there was an order that I come up with some regulations regarding marijuana in residential zones regarding things such as setbacks and fences, etc. In diving into that, I realized that there was some of these items were beyond rural residential and they needed to apply countywide. So some rules were crafted and it went to the Planning Commission on October 31st. That was a public hearing. At that time, we talked about such things as grandfathering, lights, fences, etc. The Planning Commission could not reach a decision that day, so they had a follow-up discussion on November 7th. At that time, again, they could not make a final recommendation or decision on what to recommend to you, so they forwarded to you with a recommendation of no recommendation. The board then had a public hearing, their first public hearing on January 30th. They had another public hearing on January 6th, and I apologize, I left the 6th off of that. And then, of course, today we have our first reading, and then the first week in August we will have our second hearing. So the first thing I want to draw your attention to is these proposed rules before you. First, to let you know there were a lot of proposals. So the board agreed we would bring them forward to you in groups. And this first group we're discussing today were the non-controversial. Offhand, I don't recall any conversation or negative comments about these, other than one person had a comment about fence setbacks. But other than that, the comments we pretty much received were, don't regulate us, don't throw a small farmer, don't take away my medicine. But it really wasn't specific to these rules that we're going to talk about now. So the first thing is we're looking at creating definitions for fences and site obscuring fences. The code currently talks a lot about fences and site obscuring fences, but does not have a definition. So this basically cleans up and gives us those definitions to work with. Second one relates to accessory structure standards, and it makes it very clear, the code is audited at the current time, but it is not clear, that if you have a fence and it's less than 7 feet in height, it does not require a development permit. This just, again, is a cleanup amendment.
And that's consistent with state law.
That is correct.
That's really important. Isn't an arbitrary number
right.
Really
7 feet is the cutoff for the state building safety codes that says over 7 feet you regulate a site obscuring fence, below that you do not. So. Next one is in the RR1, R2.5, and lot zoned R5 that are less than 2.5 acres, the cumulative size of all buildings on the lot shall not exceed 50% of the lot area. In other words, in those areas where you have smaller lots, we want to minimize overcrowding and overdevelopment on those lots and reduce the potential for runoff onto neighboring properties. So those are limited to 50%. We did play around with some of the smaller lots on our GIS system. We couldn't find any that met that capacity already. So this is ideally going to affect very few people. Like I said, it's to reduce the overcrowding or overdevelopment if you're putting greenhouses, barns, multiple lodges, etc. I want to make a note that that is looking at buildings, not overall impervious surface. Impervious surface would include such things as sidewalks, patios, etc. So this does not include the impervious surface. It is just the buildings. The other one is no indoor lighting associated with a marijuana grow shall be visible from adjacent dwellings between dusk and dawn. This is targeted purely at to reduce neighborhood conflicts and to protect the night sky. We did hear positive things in our hearings about the need to protect that night sky. So this helps accomplish that goal. And the other thing is, the thought was, you know, we're not, it's difficult to regulate lighting from a road or from a mile away. But let's look at those neighbors and try and reduce those neighborhood conflicts by saying if it's visible from the dwelling on the adjacent lot, then we're going to regulate the lighting. When we look at fences, at the current time, we have side and rear yard setbacks. We also have fence setbacks, right-of-way setbacks or front yard setbacks. Those will remain in place. This is purely to look at side and rear yard setbacks. At the current time, we will require, in some zones, a 30-foot setback, which means if both neighbors put up a fence, there's a 60-foot no man's land in between. Initially, when you look at fence setbacks, you usually find them in an urban area, and they're meant so that people can maintain both sides of the fence. It doesn't work that way in a rural area. What we end up doing is somebody ends up, over time, believing they own that additional land, and then we start having lot line disputes. So what this does is it says, you can put that fence on the side and rear lot line. It clarifies that fences cannot be made of junk, tarps, rip balls, etc., appliances, cars. The language is in the handout that you have. But this was, we had received, I don't know if it's even fair to say hundreds of complaints about tarps. You have received them as well, and so did the previous board. This helps us ensure that those fences are either made of a solid material such as wood or a chain link fence, something of that matter. But as far as temporary or man-made materials, they would no longer be allowed. vegetative screen is required. And sometimes the state would let you have a vegetative screen. So what this says is, if a vegetative screen is required, the vegetation has to be maintained. You can't just plant it and walk away. You actually have to water it, you have to maintain it. And if it's associated with marijuana, it has to be capable of screening the marijuana plants within 3 years. What this means is, a lot of times Boy Scouts will sell 6-inch trees. Don't plant the 6-inch trees, because we want to make sure it's doing its job. So in 3 years, it better be tall enough to shield those marijuana plants. Shade cloth. A lot of people use shade cloth over the top of their plants to minimize the sun damage to the, I believe it's the crystals, and sometimes water damage, etc. This says shade cloths are okay, but they're on a temporary basis, and they cannot exceed 3 months. We also currently have some standards on parking, but they only refer to the parking lot. So these have been expanded that all exterior lighting, including lighting from security systems, has to be shielded and cast light downward so that light is not cast onto adjacent properties or into the night sky. Again, we're trying to protect that night sky and the neighbors. What I think a lot of people don't realize, especially when it comes to marijuana, is, you know, we do require permits. The state requires us to require permits for such things as security fences, comics boxes, etc., things of that nature. This takes a step further and says, you know, you need your, first of all, people need to know they need that permit, but it also says you're not going to be, when you have a grow and you light it up for a security system, you're lighting up your grow. You're not going to light up your neighbor as well.
Just to clarify, these restrictions are not just to marijuana, though.
Some are not. It's very specific. This particular one is not specific to marijuana. If it's specific to marijuana, it does stay in there. For instance, we'll get to some on greenhouses that we'll talk about more specific. So as far as outdoor lighting, including lighting from security systems, again, it has to be shielded and cast downward. So basically, you're finding these lighting standards in the parking section, and you're also going to find them in the lighting section. So it's very clear. You know, we don't want it just in parking, because somebody might think it only applies in parking. So we're reiterating it twice in the code, so it's very clear. Then if you look at the last one, and Commissioner Morgan, this one does apply specific to marijuana. No indoor lighting in or by an indoor marijuana growing area or indoor marijuana processing facility shall be visible from adjacent dwellings between dusk and dawn. Again, what we're asking them to do is to have the light depth or canvases or something to shield that so as to eliminate the lights going on to neighboring properties or visible from neighboring properties. Erosion control. Sometimes, we will see people deliver soil, and it will be stockpiled, and then it starts running off, and then we end up having issues with water quality, sometimes with neighbors. And what this says is, if you're going to place a pile of fill on your property, and it's in excess of 10 cubic yards, you have to use best management practices to control the runoff. Straw bales at the bottom, erosion control fabric, something so that it's not running away from the site. No filling or grading on a slope greater than 15% without a stormwater management plan. And that is currently the standard for a lot of development in the county, especially if you're doing like a subdivision, a land division. If you're going to be interfering with a slope greater than 15%, we do require a stormwater management plan. So if a grower, I'll use the grower as the example in this case, if a grower is out cutting into the side of a mountain, taking the top of a mountain off, we have quite a few violations for that right now. What this is saying is you can't be doing that unless you have an approved stormwater management plan to address where that runoff is going. And stormwater management plans have to be designed by an engineer or other qualified individual to make sure that they are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. The current time, we do not really have regulations on berms, but so we've added that. Berms have setbacks. They're measured from the total of the mound. They're equal to the setback for a structure in that zone, and they have to be seeded. No more dirt piles running onto the neighbor's property.
section of that. Has that been around for, I see construction sites all over the place and they have to put up the tubes, you know, to keep their soil off their property. And you're right, I think we get a tremendous amount of calls about, you know, hey, a guy bought the land next to me and it was not forested, but there was, you know, there was trees on it and brush and everything. He just came in and bladed it all off. And now I've got runoff onto my property, it's going down into bar ditches and so on and so forth. Hasn't that been in all along for just general construction? It's not pointed right at the cannabis industry. It's just saying that the cannabis industry needs to follow those rules. Or is this different?
In our county, we require it when you're doing land disturbances over a certain size or a subdivision, basically.
Right.
So we always have had some type of rule on the books for that. What we don't have is saying anytime you are doing, let's say, general construction, like building a garage, that you have to use best management practices. Our code lacks that at the current time.
Okay, so land disturbances, is that defined in our code? You mentioned land disturbance.
No, and that's why we have to look at, as you know, we have a whole series of amendments to bring forward regarding so many things in the ordinance that need cleaning up. The whole erosion section, the erosion control section, is something that really needs work.
Okay. But we're going to be working on it.
Yeah, we're taking this first bite because this is like the one that's kind of emergent right now. But eventually we'll be looking at changing all of those sections.
Yeah, because we get a tremendous amount of complaints. Not complaints, it's concerned citizens calling in and stating what happened on the land next to them and so on and so forth. And with no, I don't know where the enforcement side is going to come from.
Yes, we do get quite a few. You know, usually they're right up to the property line. They're not seeded. And when you go out there, you can see it running onto the neighbor's property. These rules should help address that.
To further answer your question, Commissioner DeYoung, 15% is in our code several times. When you put in a road, if you're exceeding 15%, there are certain restrictions. Cut and fill is 4 feet. On either side, regardless of the grade, and a site development permit requires what this requires if it's exceeding 15%. So if you were looking to put in a house pad or whatever into the side of the hill, if the slope is exceeding 15%, you're required to have a plan for that right now. So it's really consistent and frankly kind of just broadening it out to where, you know, people are doing more than just putting in a house. They're doing more than just putting in a road in those areas that exceed 15%. And I've seen it pretty regularly around where they're cutting right into the side of a hill. I've got an example just off of Caves Highway, Tyser Crossing, and it's pretty significant what they've done up there. I don't know what kind of permits or engineering they've obtained, but there's a lot of people that live right below that and could seriously be negatively impacted by that without proper plan. So, well, the point of these, Commissioner Moore.
I do have a question about the fencing. As far as I can tell, nothing in here requires there to be a fence. But if a fence is installed, these are the regulations for the fence. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So we're not requiring fencing?
Not by these amendments. I will say in some uses, like when you're dealing with a junkyard or a salvage yard, you know, you'll find that you'll have to have a fence up there. But aside from those industrial type uses that you may put that as a condition, no. We do not require fences around properties at the current time.
I think that's a really good point of clarification. A lot of people look at the county as saying, why are you requiring all of these sometimes ugly fences? Sometimes they're really nice. There's still a fence. That's not us. That's OLCC requiring in their security plan. Yeah, you need to put a fence, but that's not us, and we really don't have any jurisdiction over that until it says, we say, well, it can't be made out of root balls. It can't be old cars or vans or stacking up
bed springs
or dryers. You know.
Seen it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it needs to try to be a little bit aesthetic, accomplish the task, but not really be an eyesore. As I've seen that a number of times around, it's just,
but contrarily, there's one out on Redwood Highway that is basically a vegetative screen that has been secured to fence posts, and it looks very sharp.
Yeah,
it's maintained well. It looks like it's intentional, and it's, I think that's great.
Yeah.
Just for clarification, I guess, for the people in the audience, because we often get this question, is the OLCC has changed their rules, and they will now allow chain link, sometimes vegetation. They're looking at them as you submit a security plan, and they're making those determinations based on that. And so that should help with some of our fencing issues.
I think they all, go ahead, Commissioner Dion.
Now, on the chain link aspect of that, does it still have to be 50% of paint, or can it just be a regular chain like that?
So if it's chain link fence, under 7 feet in height, we're not regulating it at all. And we do not, if that chain link fence, if they put stuff on it to make it more than 50%, yeah, if they made it more than 50% opaque, then we would view it as a site of screening fence.
Okay, but there's no requirement for them to put the slatting in there and and opaque, be it at least 50% opaque?
No.
From our standpoint, from the county standpoint, and from the state standpoint, under the new regulation?
They may.
It depends what the state says with that security plan for that property, but I have not seen that. They've been pretty clear that chains and fences are okay in my discussions with OLCC.
So I guess if you need to please OLCC, if you're a cannabis grower, okay, along with the fences, our part of it is pretty clear. You can be on around the property line, no car bodies, no appliances or the like. But aside from that, you really need to check with OLCC, because
it's their requirement. I mean, they're the ones requiring a security plan, so if there's a fence required, it would be theirs. So we do tell them to check with them, and if they are required to have a fence, we explain to them if it's under 7 feet in height, these are the rules. If it's over 7 feet in height, make sure you get your permit, and these are the rules. The only time fences, if these amendments pass, the only challenging thing with fences is when you get in that front yard, because you want to make sure you're not blocking the traffic vision. You know, so you'll have to stagger the fence height or just keep it below a certain height in the front yard.
Now, and there are certain properties out there that back up to BLM, U.S. Forest Service land, so on and so on, or Oregon Department of Forestry. Who makes a determination whether they need a fence back there? Because there's nobody, no road behind it or whatever.
OLCC is making those determinations.
They make the decision.
And the ones that there's a lot that I don't see, but of the ones I've seen, they've been waiting the fence to back up to the other one because it's not visible.
Thank you.
So these text amendments are supposed to be the easy, move it forward, non-controversial. We've spent a lot of time on these already, and frankly, it's because we want to get it right. But we need to get in kind of a rhythm, because we're getting our code codified and delivered to the board rather soon. And then there's going to be a need to kind of update and change. Unfortunately, there's developers in the audience, I can see, and their challenge is always, well, your code says this, but the state code says that. And there's inconsistencies, and we want to work those out. And so these are the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, in our code that we can make improvements. The fence setback for me was kind of the most egregious. I'd hate to see two neighbors who are required to do a 30-foot setback on either side, and you do experience that 60-foot no-man's land. You're paying taxes for it, but you can't use it. I just found that one completely asinine, and we really need to fix that. The light one for me is a little bit of a challenge. I mean, I want to be able to do pretty much anything I want to do with my property. But at the same time, you know, people have the right to enjoy kind of the night sky. We're in a rural area, even the RR zones. And there are simple provisions that people can make for their grows, so to speak, and reducing the light incursion onto neighboring properties. The problem is that they're going to see like an industrial complex maybe down the road. For my parents' ranch, I could see the night sky being lit up by Rough and Ready, and that was probably 5-6 miles away. That's just the way it is. Industrial lands are set aside with certain provisions. So it's the rural residential that kind of needs to keep that rural residential attitude and do everything they can to not have a negative effect on their neighbors. Because you are in kind of close proximities. I hear a lot of, I'm going to say, Californians come up and they say, oh, I bought this big piece of property. It's 5 acres, blah, blah, blah. To me, I grew up on a pretty good sized ranch. 5 acres is a postage stamp, and the effect that you have on your neighbor is tremendous. You know, if you're running a piece of equipment or you have light going all night or what have you, that's not big enough to really have that sound buffer report. And so we're going to be moving these forward ideally. And as flawed state as they are, they're pretty much as good as we can deliver. There's probably room for improvement, but it's sometimes you have to just kind of get off the stick and move it forward. Quit thinking around with perfection and move it back, move it forward, and then move on to the next set. Because there's, you know, a lot of people in the audience who are looking at, wait a second, my issue isn't addressed here. My neighbor's doing X, Y, or Z. We don't move on to that. I mean, we've got parallel tracks running. We've got to get this one moving, and then we can go to the next set of the next batch that Ms. Meltzer has ready for us. And so that's the process. It's two readings, and then we move it forward. An ordinance has 90 days before it's implemented after the second reading. So you can see we move in a pretty cumbersome process. Even right now, we're over 100 days before these specific things actually go into law. And so there's another section in our agenda where we're talking about initiating this very same process. You can see how this process took over a year. An expedited version takes about 6 months, 5 to 6 on a best case scenario, to get a concept from the board, instruct it to the director, and then actually have it come to fruition and be approved. So it's a cumbersome process, I think on purpose, so that we have time to deliberate about it and get it right. And without further ado, to make me take it longer, I think we're good, and we're going to open it up for public comment at this point. So thank you, Ms. Meltzer. You'll be given 3 minutes. It's really on just this subject, this first reading of this ordinance, so really try to dial it in to specific elements about it. General statements kind of at this point may not be as helpful, but if we do need to refine something where people bring up a point, Mr. Morgan brought up a point yesterday about something, it was like, well, thank goodness you're in the room, because that's something that obviously escaped us. It's totally possible at this stage of the game. That's why we have first and second reading. We can change certain elements of it without changing the full intent and still move it forward. If we change the full intent, we have to go back for a first reading on it. And so ideally, we've got it to a point where it's ready to move forward. We'll just find out. So from all of you people who are here to comment on this, item number one, the proposed change to this ordinance. And please just raise your hand. Everybody will be given an opportunity who wants one today, and we'll take first comment. So not everybody at once, but first brave soul. Or we've done a phenomenal job of taking a year's time and got it perfectly right, and everybody's here to speak on the second item on our agenda, which is the other order moving something forward. So, Mr. Hart, you can go first. Brave soul. Nice back to the 50s shirt.
Being the car guy, got to have a car shirt.
Are those all registered as functions?
That sounds like a voice of experience.
I got a shirt just like that, but I wear it on special occasions. I don't wear your.
For the record, Bob Hart, 5126 to 7th Street, planning consultant. There are a few minor things. I think, by and large, it's not a bad package. I think it really clarifies the issue of fences, which was a major problem. One of the questions I had on this coverage, that's on page 2 of the 50%, I think this is probably a solution in search of a problem. There's already limitations on structures. Accessory structures on RR1 properties, 2,500 square feet. You got a 2,000 square foot house, 2,500 square foot of maximum accessory structure. You're at 4,500 square feet out of an acre, 43,000. I don't think that section is necessary. I think that's already covered by the accessory structure limitations. So I just don't see a need for it. The other thing is what I call magic words. In the one section right beneath it, on section D, lighting indoor marijuana processing facility, there's a difference between processing and production. These are words defined by the state of Oregon. If you're in production, you're growing, trimming, doing modifications to the plants, where processing is the conversion of the finished product into oils or edibles or something like that. Those are commercial structures where you have to have windows, bathrooms, and things like that to meet the building code and to say you can't have any light showing from these processing facilities, I think would be a problem, a conflict. If you want to change the production, I don't have any problems. I don't see that to be a conflict, because that's where the big problem is when people are using interior lights, they're running them 24 hours a day, and it affects adjoining properties. So if you change processing to production, I don't think that that would be a problem. Two final points. One, the exterior lighting for security. This applies to everywhere throughout the county under section 77.010, and you mentioned rough and ready. I think that security lighting in industrial commercial things should not have the limitations that it can't go on to adjoining properties. There should be some kind of exception, because you have large areas for industrial commercial operations, and you're going to need some different lighting standards. And the last one is this grading issue. The current county code requires a grading, erosion, and sediment control plan on any slopes that are above 15% or granitic soils, which are ones that are subject to movement, even at slopes less than 15%. And what this says is use best management practices, and I don't know what that means. It's not defined in this code, so anybody can show up and ask, where's your best management practices, and it's not defined, we don't know what it means.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Good comments, and we'll have Mr. Hart answer those if necessary.
Any questions?
No, thanks.
Thank you.
Not that I'm there. Anyone else on this? Yes, Mr. Hart.
Emphasize a couple of things that Mr. Hart had to say. Processing is in fact prohibited on rural residential lands under the OLCC. You won't be seeing any businesses apply for permits, that type, on that land. And the other one is more about the general language. When I hear cleanup, I think reducing, I think compacting, I think removing things that are duplicitous. I look at some rules and regulations that are currently not enforced, either because they're unenforceable or because they're not popular. So when I think of cleanup language, I don't think of adding more on top of something. I think of looking at the code and applying it properly as it already exists, and cleaning up would mean to me more looking at conformity with state language and making things easier for builders and developers, not adding additional burden to residents. Thank you.
Anyone else? Bring it back to the board. We'll ask Ms. Schmelzer to come up if she wouldn't mind clarifying a couple of sections. I have some comments as well, and I think the board may as well. So. Brief but good comments, just the same thing.
Okay, I'll begin with the comment about there's already something on the books that regulates 50%. What's on the books right now regulates floor area, which includes second floors. Footprint is basically what is covering that surface. When you look down from the sky, what is covering that surface? So there is a difference. Processing light, we do have people that process, not in RR, but what we're asking them to do is pull their shade. If they're working at night, just simply pull a shade on their window. As far as lighting in an industrial park, they do have lights. A lot of times they are bound by rural residential properties or other properties. Again, we're not saying they can't have light. We're saying just have your light chilled down instead of up and have it stay on your industrial property so you can watch your industrial property instead of your neighboring property.
So you're not talking about the global light. You're talking about the direct. So when I have a flashlight pointing this way and the beam is touching certain things, I can see behind me in some way because the glow is bright enough I can see behind me, but the shining is actually just shining on this area. So you're saying that the hood and all that means your light stays on your property, not the glow stays on your property, but actually the beam of the light.
Footprint of the light.
The footprint of the light, I guess, is the easiest way. Yeah, so when you have a light, it's going to go like this, correct? When light shines down, my elbows have to stay on my property. As far as best management practices, those are professional standards. We don't list them in our ordinance because they are based, there's many, many different best management practices out there. They are professional standards. Engineers, for example, will have best management practices they can recommend. Even state agencies will have best management practices they recommend. We could put all of those best management practices in our ordinance. We'd have to add quite a bit. Basically, we're saying use best management practices. I mean, it's very clear. Department of Ag will have them. I mean, it's they're standardized best management practices out there for many, many things. We're asking you just use the best management practices when you're working with soil.
And they frankly evolve over time.
They do. They change. They're continuing. As far as cleanup, we do like to clean up our ordinance from time to time. When we find something wrong or something that is confusing the public, we like to clean it up. We want the code to be very clear to the public to avoid confusion. And also, when you clean up an ordinance, you're getting rid of arbitrary things and you're making your code defensible. For example, by not having the definition of fence right now, it could be argued what is a fence. We want to make sure that the county is protected so that we are not costing the taxpayers undue burden on lawsuits. So cleanup is very common, and we will continue to clean up. There's people in this room who've asked us to clean up stuff. It's an ongoing process. As you implement a document that is that old, you will continue to find things that are outdated and need clarification and need to be legally defensive.
So I think that the concern is probably about using the word clean up our code, and that could have different definitions by different people. So redacting and reducing might be yours. For us, I think it's the clarification of what a fence is. It's kind of embarrassing that we have a code that regulates fences, but we don't tell what a fence is. And you can just drive around Josephine County, and a lot of people have a lot of different definitions of what constitutes a fence. It depends on their need. You know, it might not keep animals in, but it keeps people out, or it obscures people when they're driving by, but it really doesn't look that great, or it's really not what really kind of is for the neighborhood appropriate, and that sort of thing. So if you want to do that on the back of your property where nobody can see it, it's a brush pile full of roof walls, I don't know that anybody cares, you know, whatever. It's almost probably like habitat creation, but at the same time, that's probably not the most aesthetic thing to be putting on an RR right in the neighborhood as your obstruction to seeing into your property. So that's what I see it as. The clarification really helps. I think people looking at our code and like, well, what does that mean? That's not very clear. I can hear and feel Mr. Hart's concern about best practices. I think we would probably have a real challenging time of illustrating. And all we would be doing would be providing specific examples of what, but I wouldn't want to limit people's creativity on ways to mitigate stormwater runoff. Maybe it's hay bales for somebody, but it could be chips for somebody else, you know, that are staked into the ground with, the intent of the code, we're not going to micromanage people. Let's just be adults here and try to figure out ways to keep runoff off of people's property and keep it on your own. It kind of cuts both ways. You want us to be specific and cite exact things. Those might be real expensive or not even available certain times of the year. I'm going to leave it up to responsible people, hopefully, to say, no, it's either working or it isn't. It's runoff happening or it isn't. And that's the goal. So, Commissioner Morgan.
I do appreciate that we had questions the first time this came up between the difference between processing and production. And there was argument that state was calling producing processing or something like that. And so that's where that language came in there, and I think that's something we can fix. The portion I didn't hear addressed was Mr. Hart's comment about the gradient soil, or the soil that tends to move regardless of the grade percentage. Would it be more appropriate to have this consistent with the rest of the code, where it has something else specified to a specific level in the erosion control already, that this language should be the same?
Well, this... The language, okay, so the code general, okay, so there are little details. I didn't mention every single section of our code, but generally you're looking at something that's on the slope greater than 15%, and that's generally the concern we have right now with this one, is when you're cutting roads through a mountain, be advised, you you need a stormwater management plan. And when you are putting up berms, we are going to be concerned about runoff, etc. If you want to say anytime you develop on granitic soils, you need a stormwater management plan, fine. That's definitely your prerogative. I personally think that's really stifling development and it's overkill.
Yeah, there's a significant portion of Josephine County that has granicular soils and such, and I think, you know, if you're not doing significant grading and fill, you're going to be probably okay, but it doesn't take much to start erosion in granicular soils. A real problem.
Granite, we've got a lot of granite around here, and it moves every time it rains. I mean, mm-hmm. You look at it. Once you disturb it, it's fine while it's laying there. It's been there for 50 years or whatever, but you disturb it, move around a little bit. First rain, some of it's going to move, and it's going to move maybe on your neighbor's property or whatever. So I think that's what you're talking about, different styles of soil. There's some that just you can't get it off your tires, and then there's granite. And we've got a lot of granite around here. So I think there needs to be some, at some point in time, somebody's got to say, you know, that's one of those soils that's going to move around a lot. Exercise some caution, but I don't know how you write that in there. I can't imagine it's not in there for in their general building code. You know, when you're cutting a pad for a house or whatever, you know, that something's in there that says you can't cut that pad and then have it all go off your neighbor's yard first rainstorm. So the question I have is about the indoor lighting. It says no indoor lighting used in or by an indoor marijuana growing area or outdoor marijuana processing facility or production shall be visible from dwellings on adjacent properties. And I think Commissioner Morgan alluded to it. In other words, is it the bulb that I can't see? I think how is this pointed towards the concern out in rural communities, certainly by the fire departments, that I'm getting calls all night long, you know, that, hey, this whole place is on fire, and they go out there and it's just lighting up the night sky. Does this do anything to address the night sky? You know, do they have to put a shielding over the top of the entire greenhouse at night and then take it off every day? What does that mean?
Yes, that is true. A lot of them have light depth shields that will come over and cover it. Mm-hmm. For those that don't, yes, put a tarp over it at night.
Okay, so it can't light up the night sky.
Right.
I'm not surprised that Fish and Wildlife hasn't weighed in on any of that because of the nocturnal animals, predators, and whatnot.
Right. If it helps with clarification, I can read you the exact language on the light shielding, the light cast. It is all exterior lighting, including light emitted from security systems, shall be shielded or use a hooded lens that casts light downward so as to ensure no light is cast onto adjacent properties or upward into the night sky. Keep going.
That's exterior lighting and light emitted from security systems. That's what that does. But I'm talking about lighting from inside the facility that's going out through the opaque ceiling and roof area and lighting up the night sky. And that's not addressed. It's not all light. It's not all exterior lighting. If you took off the word exterior, it said all lighting, including light emitted.
That's what's here.
Right.
Under
then you put off the indoor lighting. it was that indoor lighting used in or by an indoor marijuana growing area or indoor marijuana processing facility shall be visible from dwellings on adjacent properties between dusk and dawn. And there was a comment that we don't allow processing on rural residential. That's absolutely true. But this section is not specific to rural residential.
Well, I would like to see something on in 020A that addresses upward into the night sky. The indoor lighting needs can't be upward into the night sky.
Doesn't it cover that by saying visible? From an adjacent property? If it was pointing up in the sky, you'd be able to see it from an adjacent property?
It's not clear to me.
I'm asking.
I want clarity. I mean, that's the purpose of addressing these codes so that anybody picking it up can say, I understand that means the lighting from inside my greenhouse cannot shine into the night sky.
So add the line from up above that says...
In their view, you do outside lighting and security lighting in A, in 010A and in 020A, we're addressing indoor lighting.
Yeah.
And there's two different sets of parameters.
So you're suggesting that we take the portion from outdoor lighting that says light cast downwards so to ensure no light, or let's see, no light cast onto adjacent properties nor upward in the night sky be
yes.
added to indoor lighting
added
as well.
To indoor lights as well.
As a reminder, when this was discussed at a workshop, the difference between the outdoor and the indoor lighting was with indoor lighting, we should only be concerned about what that neighbor is seeing. So if that neighbor sees light coming out of there, bottom or top or side, that has to be controlled between us and them. The other one applies to more than just the neighbor. Oh, so it ensures the light is not cast onto the neighbor.
I'm concerned about lighting up the night sky. Listening to the fire chief out in the valley, he's tired of running all over the place on wild goose chases because we're lighting up the night sky with an indoor lighting source, not his outdoor lighting source, but his indoor lighting source, because they want to run three shifts in that green house.
Right. We did discuss this because a lot of those areas we're seeing those problems are on the ag lands, agricultural lands. And that is when, in the workshop, we discussed that we can't regulate everything.
So should
the problems tend to be with the neighbors.
This is going to be for all land, ag land, farmland, everything.
That is correct.
And then we're going to get to rural residential in the next segment.
Well, what this does is it says, regardless of what, and this is one of the discussions we had, should we only be looking at the lighting in a rural residential, or should we be looking at it everywhere? And what we decided to say was, well, let's look at it everywhere. As long as that neighbor is not being affected by it, let it go. The neighbor, you know, if there's a house next door, you have to protect it between dusk and dawn. If you're in an ag land and you have no neighbor, you don't have to protect it.
Did you hear anything from, say, Chief Hope or Williams Fire District or anybody concerning their concerns were about running out to, gee, I know this place is all on fire. I see this big glow up the hill. That's neighbors helping me. That's see something, say something.
Right.
But if it's see something, say something, and if it is a fire, well, we're glad. But if, you know, I just don't want them to get real, is it probably another greenhouse? I'm not going to be in any hurt, or I'm not going to roll on this. I don't like that. I want it to be legit. When somebody calls in, because we're neighbor helping neighbor at Gilson County, we're thin on resources to be able to help. The county can't help us, but they can help each other. And when if they continue down that road, I'd say Chief Folk out of Illinois Valley, he's expressed it many times, as is, I believe, Wayne Fire District. They've got the same concern. Rural Metro, they've all got it.
Yes, we have heard those complaints that people think there's a fire out there and they're not out there.
Yeah.
We've also had a pilot report one that he thought was a fire at one time.
Well, I just wanted to be very clear in our code so that we don't have to go back out there. I'm just trying to take the burden off of you having to go out there and re-explain, well, we meant to put in the night sky in 20020A, but you know, we just couldn't squeeze that in. You know, I don't know where that works. I'm saying that I have a concern about it. And if I have a concern about it, I'm going to guess that probably maybe five or six other people in the room have a concern about it. And if we can take that concern away by just adding not to onto adjacent properties that are cast into the upper night, into the night sky, I'm golden with that. It doesn't show up for most cattle. If that's a possibility, that's a change that I would like to make, but we would make that. I don't know what the process is to make that change.
You make a recommendation to Julie. Ms. Schmelzer, she works it out, brings it back to the board, and
I'm concerned about
we can entertain that next reading. Yeah. I don't think it changes it substantially. I think it just clarifies it maybe.
I agree. If again, when we look at it, and I hate to use the word cleanup, but we do want it to be as easy to understand as possible and as defensible as possible.
Well, that's part of the process, is to, you know, you look at this thing over and over and over and over and over and over again, and where certain parts of it drop off the radar. Whereas that's what the public hearing is all about, because they're going to bring up other things that we're not seeing. We're going to bring up things that are concerned to us that maybe, you know, because you've looked at it so many times, it gets not boring, that's not the right word for it, but you really start looking at it, you know, not quite, you're serious about it, but there's things you're going to miss. I do that the same thing. I can look at a car 100 times and I know I missed something. I don't know what it is till I go off the road. But I just, that was just my concern there. So if that can be addressed, I'm happy.
Sure. So just to clarify, though. So you're saying if there's light emitted from a building or a greenhouse, neighbors can't, you know, right now it says if neighbors see it, can't have it. You want it to also say, and that light can't go up into the sky or onto adjacent properties, correct?
I mean, I know we used to do this under the outline, 010 section, take the word exterior out. All lighting, instead of saying all exterior lighting, all lighting, including light emitted from exterior systems, so forth, and not up into the night sky. And then you get the indoor lighting, and you say it can't be visible from dwellings or adjacent property between dusk and dawn, but that does not keep somebody from having a greenhouse that shines up into the night sky and triggers a call from the neighbors, or an airplane flying over, or somebody new to the area.
That's an easy change, and all it does is clarify.
Okay. It's not clear.
Visible by the neighbor, what that means.
Okay.
I'm going to suggest my preference would be not to remove that exterior lighting word because it's a section for outdoor lighting. But add it to the indoor lighting because later down the road they're going to say, see, you meant that for outdoor because it's under the outdoor section.
Right.
And our intent won't be there. It has to be clearly laid out in the
wording.
Or you can take the exterior wording out, but you also must put it under indoor.
Exactly.
To make sure that it doesn't confuse the intent.
We'll just duplicate the language.
I think this is a great opportunity to illustrate to the public. So we're elected officials, two of us is a quorum. We don't get together and hash this stuff out except in public meetings. And so that's another restriction that we have. This also illustrates how it can take a year to get here. I haven't thought about it yet. I want to poke holes in it. Everything sounds good until we say, but what about this? What about that agricultural processor that has to do something like that? It doesn't do indoors. They do emit light. I have to think about that. So we will we'll try to move something forward. It's a good place to start, and we'll address it at the next reading. I apologize on the agenda. It says that our second reading is August 3rd. That's a Thursday. All of our weekly business sessions are typically on a Wednesday, and so it's correct in the document that you guys have to look at reviewing the actual text. It does say August 2nd, which is a Wednesday. It'll be right here in the Ambassador, either at 9 o'clock or at 5:30, 6 o'clock, sometime in there.
It's 9 a.m.
Yeah. So I think with that, we'll move forward. So I need a motion to approve the first reading of Ordinance Number 2017-001, it's the joy to be a chair, and Ordinance amending the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code, Ordinance Number 94-4, is originally adopted and subsequently amended to implement certain changes related to new definitions created and adding new Section 72.060.C, 72.060.D, clarifying accessory structure standards, 73.030.C, prescribing composition of walls, fences, and screens, 77.010 and 77.020 lighting, 83.020.C, setting limits for grade and fill, amending the text, 72.020.A, structures, and 73.030.A.2 and 73.030.B.2 fences, and 75.060.E, restricting exterior lighting. Second reading to be August 2nd.
So I'm going to make a motion that we approve the first reading, schedule the second reading and adoption for August 2nd, with instructing staff to come back on August 2nd with the recommended amendments Commissioner DeYoung mentioned.
Great. Second.
Moving seconded. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries 3-0. Item number 2 is administrative actions in consideration of item 2A, approval of order number 2017-034 in the matter of authorizing the Josephine County Planning Community Development / Planning Director to initiate a land use application to amend the Rural Land Development Code to provide for regulation to prohibit marijuana production in rural residential zones, suspending processing of requests for land use compatibility statements, known as LUCSes, submitted for all rural residential zones. We have Ms. Schmelzer. We've addressed this before. last week, but we didn't have a full board, and Commissioner DeYoung was interested in tabling that until we did. So do you want to lead us through a brief discussion? We had a discussion yesterday on this issue, and really what we're doing here today.
So I'll start out with a little background about why we are here even discussing an order. Both the commissioners and our department had received hundreds of phone calls and emails. There was a time where we kept track and we just stopped. We couldn't keep up with that, and I'm sure you've done the same thing. We've also heard of many, many feuds between neighbors over marijuana on, primarily it was the rural residential zones that were causing where we were getting the feuds. As far as our office goes, we actually have over 300 marijuana-related cases that were considered open violations. In other words, something is, you know, we don't regulate producing marijuana in the current time, but there will be fences with marijuana that don't have permits, or multiple campers on a property, marijuana grow without approvals, sewage running into a creek because of the camper on the marijuana grow, things of that nature. So we have about 300 of those cases open right now. Then there was the advisory question on the ballot, which basically said that two-thirds of the people wanted us to regulate OLCC marijuana or commercial marijuana on rural residential properties. We also looked at some of the crime stats, and you know, we can't really go by what the Sheriff's Department has as far as crime, because a lot of stuff is not reported, as you know, we don't have a staff to respond to a lot of them. So I did talk with a concierge service that does security for the county, and he reported that in the first 6 months of 2017, compared to the first 2 months in 2016, his cases went up 55%. Those include burglary, theft, trespass, etc., those type of crimes. So we knew something had to be done, and of course, with the ballot question, commissioners decided it's time to do something about it. So I want to talk to you a little bit, give you a little bit of a picture of why we're looking at RR5, or rural residential, I'm sorry. So at the current time, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, let me back up, there's a thing called the Land Use Compatibility Statement, and it's a state form. It's not a county form, it's a state form. And what it does is it asks the county to sign off saying whether that use is not prohibited in that zone. So it doesn't say, can they get permits for this? It just says, would that use be allowed in that zone if they comply with all the rules? So we have to check off yes or no. And for example, if somebody wanted a retail store in a rural residential zone, we would check it's prohibited. You can't have a retail store in rural residential. We've also received a lot of complaints that all these recreational growers have come in from across the country. They're destroying the land, and we're having all these problems. So I decided to look a little bit at the data. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, Julie, just because they say that's Josephine County, that's because they just moved here, or they're really from Texas or something. We look at the address at the time the Lux application is filed, so before they really start that process. So this is what we found. And this is as of July 11th, because that's the last set of approved licenses that the OLCC has forwarded to us. So as of the last time OLCC gave us data, which was last week, we have, as you can see right there, we have basically 30 licensed grows through OLCC on rural residential property just in Josephine, that are residents from Josephine County. We also have 4 people from Jackson County that received Lux for rural residential. Other in Oregon, you're going to see Portland or Bend typically. We have 2. Out of state, we have 1 licensed OLCC grower on rural residential property. They are from Florida, and none from out of the country. When you look further, you'll see, and I'm not going to go through the other numbers for you because we're focused on rural residential here today, but you'll see if you live in Josephine County, the majority of them are putting it on farm or forest land, but we do have the 30 that are in rural residential. look back and say how many lots were filed, because the previous slide shows what the state has approved, but there's a lot of lots that have been filed and have not been approved or not processed. And I asked the state, why the discrepancy in the numbers? And they said, a lot of times people get that loss, and then they never follow through because they don't want to pay the fee. Or maybe they didn't pass a background check. There's a lot of reasons why somebody would not follow through on the loss. But I still wanted to look at all the loss that we have on file right now. You were able to start applying for a loss in December of 2015. So there was a little rush. We had 48 people come in December of 2015. 23 of those were for a lux for rural residential property. In 2016, it ramped up a bit, and on rural residential, we had 111. And then this year, we're only halfway through the year, but you can see that we have 66, basically, on rural residential.
What was the total in the RRs? I was trying to, what are we expecting?
2000, I didn't total all 3 years up.
I got distracted with where I was, but I was trying to do that myself, so we know exactly.
So you have 66 in 2017?
Yeah.
You have,
it's just right on 200.
Yeah. So then I decided to say, okay, let's look at all those that applied for the lots, how many have been approved, and what's the difference? So how many applied for the lots but never got approved. And what you'll see here is there's 5 on RR1, there's 24 on RR2.5, there's 144 on RR5. So depending what happens with this order today, that tells us that there is basically 172 lots on our property that have not been approved by the state yet.
Now that, they apply to the state first, correct?
What they have to do is they have to come up with that.
They have to come to you first, and then there is a state element to it.
Correct, thank you. Yes, the form that we sign is a state form.
Okay.
And the state uses that to basically initiate their process. Because if it's not allowed, they're not even gonna bother. I also wanted to look at geographically where these grows are, the OLCC approved grows, thinking maybe that has a distinction between a lot of the complaints we're getting. Maybe some areas have more rural residential. In Cave Junction, and it's interesting, when you look around Cave Junction, you can see quite a few grows. Only 15 of them are licensed by OLCC. Grants passed, we have a significant amount more, and these are based on basically the zip codes that they give us. So in Grants passed, we have 61 that have been licensed by OLCC. In Kirby, when you look around Kirby, only 2 of those have been licensed by OLCC. Merlin, there's 4. O'Brien is 2. Selma is 3. Wilderville is 4. Williams is 12. And Wolf Creek is 6. So that's where the OLCC grows are. Now, how many of those are actually on RR property? In Cave Junction, of those 15 licensed grows, only 5 are on RR property. So if you're looking at RR property, and you're seeing all those grows, only 5 of them are licensed by OLCC. The remainder are either medical or illegal. In Grants Pass, again, there's 61 licenses. However, only 12 of those are on RR properties. The remainder, again, would be medical or illegal. You can see on down the line how that works. So Williams, for example, we have 12 OLCC. Only 4 of them are on the RR property.
When this, in the new laws coming down from the state are going to change those numbers dramatically, correct? Because isn't a certain portion of it that is not OLCC regulated right now, there's a whole ton of people out there that will have to apply to the OLCC for regulation?
They're given that option, but yes, they're going to have to. And I'll go through some of those that were.
Okay. I didn't mean to jump the gun.
No, that's fine. That's a great question. I had the same question.
So there were some things that were brought up at the last meeting and at other meetings. So I wanted to check to see what was true and what was false. So I reached out to the attorney for OLCC. I also reached out to the person who processes the licenses for OLCC. And I also reached out to the attorney for the Association of Oregon Counties. One of the things we were being told is that there's something really big coming in September and we should hold off on doing anything until September. All three have agreed that there's nothing, to their knowledge, and they're pretty knowledgeable on this subject, that there's nothing coming in September other than the requirement to have data entered into the metric. It is nothing related to land. They also said although the legislation passed, the rules won't be formulated until this December. As of December 1st, Oregon Health Authority, or the OHA growers, must notify OLCC and OHA if they will remain with OMMP or will be transitioning to OLCC. My understanding from those attorneys basically are if you're growing for more than two patients, you're going to have to transfer to OLCC. January 1st, 2018, all OHA registrants opting for the OLCC must have submitted their application by January 1st. And then, of course, next year, July, about this time, all OMMP growers meeting the criteria to have a product tracked in the OLCC system, which, again, is my understanding, more than two, when you're growing for more than two people on your property, they must be enrolled and reporting to OLCC. Failure to do so results in the OMMP registration not being renewed.
Rules won't be formulated until December 17th. There's no date specific on that.
There is, according to 2198, is it Senate Bill or House Bill 2198, whichever. It says by December 15th.
By December 15th, is that? So that can be entered into there. I'm assuming all the growers must clarify where they're going to go by December 1st. Does that give?
According to the attorneys, that is correct.
Okay, so then OLCC can take that number then, because then they'll know how big the fish they caught. And then they'll formulate the rules or tweak the rules according to that?
No, they're going to do the rules first. The rules come first.
Based on the legislation that was passed.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of legislation that was just passed. The rules to effectuate that legislation is going to be done in December. And then the registrants have to submit their application in January.
I'm looking at December 1st, 17, OHA growers must notify the OLCC and OHA if they will remain with OMMP or will be transitioning to OLCC. That's on the 1st, and then the rules aren't coming out until the 15th?
I understand what you're saying, Dan. Yes, that is my understanding as well. I think that's why it's really important to follow the rulemaking process. The state's committee that's been working on these rules has done a fantastic job. They're very open about what they have. It's all on their website. You can see what's coming and going. And then the same thing with the OLCC website. They are constantly posting the newest legislation. It's a very open process that anyone who wants to read through all of that, there's plenty of data there. So hopefully the growers know this is coming. Hopefully they're aware of this.
Okay, I'm just going to say something here. I don't know if I was at this, I'm going to treat a grower. If I was one of the OHA growers and I must notify the OLCC which category I want to be in, I want to know what all the rules are governing both of those categories before I make that decision. It lends an opportunity to move the goalposts,
sure.
and I'm not for that. So I want some clarity on that.
Okay.
Particular
from what
that
I can
timeline.
Tell, it's based on how many growers you're going to grow for, how many plants you're going to have. If you're choosing to grow for more than two people, you're choosing to go in the OLCC. If you're under the 12 mature plants and under two growers, you can stay in the OMMP. Because you're at a small level.
Is that one of the rules that will come out in December, or is that part of the law?
That's the law.
Okay, all right. Maybe that's where I'm missing it. The laws have been established.
The laws have been established. OMMP is supposed to be notifying all of the their people.
So the growers can make their decision under line three off of the law, but with no clarity as to what the rules of how that law is going to be implemented.
Yeah, the details, basically. And again, that's, I don't want to get too hung up on that.
No,
that's
fine.
State, but just so I understand, these were some of the questions that were presented, so, and these are the responses I got from the attorneys. I've heard somebody say, why now? I think we can all agree that we don't want to be disrupting the growing season. You know, with this last set of rules, we wanted to try and get it done before this growing season started. We had a lot of growers. There's a lot of tremendous growers out there who are like, what are the rules? I want to comply. What do I have to do? They weren't in place, so they went kind of in limbo this year, really not knowing what's going on. We don't want that to happen again. We want the rules in place before the next growing season, if we're going to have them. So let's just assume April 1st is our deadline, so growers know what's happening. And many are getting started before that, but let's just pick April 1st as that deadline. I'm going to work backwards. So if April 1st is your deadline, we have to have, after the board approves something at a second meeting, as Commissioner Harris said earlier, there's a 90-day period before that becomes effective. So that means that second hearing has to be held at the end of December. Let's take a week out for Christmas. That means your second reading would be December 13th. Your first reading would be December 29th. Has to be in the paper before that. You have to have time to review it. Legal has to have time to review it. It's on your back to October 24th. The Planning Commission sometimes take two meetings, so let's allow them October 9th and 16th. Again, we might lose a week in there, we might gain a week. Before it goes to the RPC, it has to go to the Department of Land Conservation Development 30 days prior. That means September 7th is the drop-dead date that I have to have a draft in place and two DLCD.
So to take effect April 1st.
In order to take effect April 1st, correct. I have to have it to them by September 7th, which means if this order is adopted today, that gives me basically 1.5 months to formulate the rules.
In your process, if I'm a grower, when am I going to be relatively certain that this set of rules is going to go in April 1st? Is there, if by the time you get to the end, December 30th, I don't have any plants in the ground yet, is this thing going to be hammered out enough to where if I'm a grower, I say, you know, I'm not going to put $150,000 in the ground?
Yes, and there's a lot of social politics that play into that as well. So by the end of December, by the end of 2017, you should have a really good idea because the board has already made their decision. We're just on that 90-day period. However, in that 90-day period, people could appeal. People could sue us over it, which may still mean. Assuming nobody does that, and we do expect something, of course, but assuming that the grower would know pretty safely by the end of December, but there are outside influencers that could affect that.
So let's be clear, the 90 days is not an opportunity to litigate against the county. It's an opportunity to refer your issue by signature collection to the voters. And that's, frankly, what the 90 days is for. It's one of the reasons we asked the non-binding question this last May. Rather than have to go through all of that and really not know where the voters stand on the issue, we've elected to put out kind of a feeler on the general sentiment ahead of time. So we're pretty assured that even if people did collect signatures and referred it to the voters, that's a pretty significant margin to have two-thirds weighing in on a subject already in that respect. So that's the whole point of that.
Right. So again, basically the end of December, they should know what's coming. There is always a chance. I would go with December deadline. Okay, so what's next? I just want to clarify with what this order reads is, if approved, I am directed to initiate a text amendment application for potential regulation of all OLCC-regulated marijuana in the rural residential zones. It's OLCC-regulated, and it's rural residential zones only.
to note, this has to go through a public hearing and be accepted as written, rejected, or amended before adoption, potentially in December of 2017. It has to go through multiple public hearings, but it can be revised as we go through the process.
As a public, who hosts the public hearing? Is it us?
It starts
or
with
the OLCC or the planning.
It starts with the Planning Commission, and then they make a recommendation to the board, and then the board will have their first reading like we are today, and then the board will have their second reading.
So there is an opportunity from here on out till it.
Correct.
Just till like, April 1st to change it.
Just like the rules that we had today that we discussed earlier, they have been through a series of public hearings. They had the Planning Commission had one. The board had two, and now the board is on their first reading, which is also a public hearing, and one more. So really you're looking at essentially five public hearings on something before it gets adopted.
And we also hit very close on that because we only had a couple of public comments. Mm-hmm.
Well, we've had hundreds over the duration of this
sure.
process.
Yeah.
And all we're doing today is starting somewhat of the culmination of the earlier subject we just talked about. And Ms. Schmelzer outlined December 15th on a good day. This could take another year. And frankly, this November, we would have waited 3 years to make this, to start this process. So it's 2.5 years right now. I've been told ever since, and I'm the commissioner that was here when the 91 passed, hold off, the state's going to fix this, they're going to work on this, they're going to do this. Meanwhile, we've got 200 applications of a land use compatibility that have been in the queue on rural residential, and that's under the OLCC program. That's not under the medical program, that are adding to the consternation, the frustration between land use purposes. And I don't think it's fair to people who fill out a LUX, and we just keep kicking the can down the road. No, we'll do it in January, which means it won't happen until 2019, which maybe there's another 150 people, 200 people who are putting infrastructure and stuff in the ground. That's going to make it all that much harder for this industry to really go where it needs to go, develop how it needs to develop. And I feel for both landowners and people who have filled out applications with the state to be totally legit, above board. This is going to be a messy process. Everybody should have known when 91 passed that we weren't going to get it right first out of the gate. And the challenge is that we're kind of going at this alone. Jackson County doesn't allow cannabis to be produced on RR zones. They just had it in their code. They inherited it that way. We have a lot of freedom here in Josephine County. We like it that way. And so it's going to be inherently messy. We're probably the only county in the state that's having to deal with it to this degree in RR zones. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles. And so it's a real pleasure, great time to serve here and have to deal with this issue. And there's no real clarity in Josephine County other than that measure we just put forward. Measure 91 failed in Josephine County by 2 votes. The closest election, I would wager, in any election we've ever had on any subject, be it an elected candidate or what have you, some of the closest we've ever had elected was Commissioner Walker, 54 vote spread. That's pretty tight when you have 30,000 people weighing in on that election, 54 votes. But for this to come down to just 2 makes it really challenging for people who are sitting on this side of the dais. So I want to get this process. I wish we would have started it yesterday so we could have had a little bit more time for discussions and we wouldn't have been pushing it through at an expedited pace. But really, we've been discussing it for 2.5 years. People have been living it for 2.5 years. We were the first county in the state to host a forum here right after Measure 91 passed. It was a week or two afterwards. We had really qualified people coming from Colorado, all over the state, Mr. Rob Ovett from AOC. I mean, you had your person on this side of the dais, and I was the MC for it. We managed it for like 3 hours debating this issue. We're going to keep debating this issue probably for a decade, if not more, if it ever goes away. This is just trying to refine a land use law that was set in place in 73 with intent to try to mitigate challenges between neighbors based on intent to use, and you got rural residential, and then you got commercial operations, and those are not necessarily always compatible.
Well, let me just finish up real quick with what happens next. So as with the order then, I am, as of, if it is signed today, I am to stop
of accepting land use compatibility statements in the rural residential zones and not process them until further notification of the board. And then the third thing is basically that I shall notify the 173 people that have land use compatibility statement applications that we are considering regulations in the rural residential zones, and the outcome could result in a prohibition on the RR land. And that is basically the summary of the order.
So right now you're saying that right now it's
173.
And they're stuck in OLCC, they're not stuck here.
Well,
they filled out the forms.
They filled out the form.
Gave them to you, and then you transferred them to OLCC.
No, they transferred to OLCC.
They take it.
So we don't know, once they leave us, we know that we signed 173 that have not been approved by OLCC yet. We do not know what happened after they left our office.
Okay. The ones that have been approved, they're in?
They're in. They've been approved by OLCC.
And it says, and I wrote a note here, when will this resume? When will we start taking... processing requests for land for lots, and you say it has to be the board is the one that lists that.
Yeah, the way the order is written, it says until further notice of the board.
Only on RR.
Only on RR.
Only on RR.
Rural residential.
Doesn't stop anything out.
No.
The EFU or anything like that.
We'll still do considerations. It doesn't mean as though they're a blanket. You get them on resource zones, but we'll process them just the same way we do now. If it's compatible, it's an approved use, and they can move forward. So,
and they still have to do the OLCC thing.
Oh yeah. Anything else?
Well, one of the things that's standing out in my mind is the Cannabis Advisory Committee that we've accepted applications for. A lot of the intent is that we have people in and out of the industry from various sides of this that can weigh in on some of the issues that are coming in, especially the multiple complaints and various things that we're dealing with. I think at some level, getting the process moving forward to allow a hearing might not be as much the controversy as stopping the luxes and having that. But at the same time, if regulations are going to be changing, I sure would love to have these people in place with this Cannabis Advisory Committee to be weighing in on what these issues are so we can be taking the right course and advising into these situations. So
when the Cannabis Advisory Committee forms, and that, I'm assuming that's pretty soon.
It's up to you.
We have to do it.
Thank you. And then there's opportunity for them to weigh in and change this?
Well, they can't change it. You know, they can weigh in on it. I do want to clarify, this is an ongoing committee. It's not a committee designed to just review proposed text amendments. It's to look at marketing, how to best neighbor practices, et cetera, the whole thing. Anything that they would review would just come in the form of advice, a recommendation, basically. They do not have the authority to approve nor deny.
All we're doing today is initiating the process. That's it. It doesn't mean it's actually even gonna happen. That's all we're doing today. So anything different other than the Lux, putting a stop to that, Commissioner Morgan's absolutely right. That is the change in policy that enacts today. I think that's only fair, responsible as a governing body, listening to 2/3 of the voters who say that's the direction we wanna go. All that was advice. It doesn't mandate that we do it. It doesn't mandate that we do anything. But it gives me clear direction that there's a problem out there. There's something that needs to be done to address this issue. And it only feels as though it has the capacity to grow as a challenge. It doesn't look as though it's going to be reducing or people are going to be moving into the out of the RR zones for cannabis production and into resource zones. So we should have done it a year ago, 2 years ago, and had it clear from the beginning. That's called a first mover potential liability, and if you're moving forward in an industry that is not refined yet, you have the ability to appreciate great successes, but also total losses, and that's just where it is. I think Oregonians in general, besides Josephine County citizens, and especially this board, owe it to rural residential property owners who established that zone back in 1973 with the intent that you get to have a residence there. That's the primary use. Resource zones are even taken care of as goal 3 and 4, I think it is, to do that resource, and you shouldn't be abridged by that. That's the Oregon Right to Farm, Oregon Right to Forest Act. And so, but that's the whole point of zoning here. And I think we just need to get this moved forward. There'll be tons of opportunity to weigh in on this. You don't have to do it at a public hearing. We get emails, several of them, every day on this subject. So it's not as though you have to wait around for your 3 minutes at one of these opportunities. Send us an email. We're making a list of those people who have done it and the issues. And so for me, we've got to get it moving forward. Or we just say, we have agreed in Josephine County to ask questions, and we're not going to act on it, and it's just going to be a challenge that's going to be growing here. And then you're going to have people who are probably sitting in the audience say, I'm not into that. I'm going to refer something to the voters that's an outright prohibition on RR zones for everything they can regulate, and that would go to the voters, and it may or may not pass. This is our opportunity to thread the needle, to refine legislation, policy, that tries to solve a lot of problems, but doesn't do it with a chainsaw by cutting off everybody's opportunity to do it everywhere. That's not what anybody, I think, wants. I hope we just want to try to work this out, and that's what this process starts out with. It's the full width and the gamut.
Well, and there's a big in the chart. RR1, RR2.5 are a big difference than RR5. And what land sizes are in RR5 and different things. So I think that's some of the things we're going to have to discuss.
Possibly.
And
see, that's getting into it.
No, I'm not
R5s
saying today. I'm just saying
one
that
acre. The non-conforming use. Yeah. Just because they're at RR5 doesn't mean they're 5 acres. You look on the map, there's hundreds of non-conforming use RR5s that are not R1, not R2.5, that are smaller than RR5.
But I would want the discussion about lot sizes to be considered, to be a part of this discussion, to be, I'm hoping everything is on the table to be discussed.
I think you're absolutely right. So I use the example, you may or may not have been here, the largest RR5 in Josephine County is about 150 acres. It was recently approved about a year ago, a 20-something year process, the poor guy. Anyway, he's got this new piece of property that's valued at $1.6 million. He can't afford to develop it, and he cannot probably afford to pay the taxes on something like that now because it used to be zoned EFU. What is he going to do? It could totally, it's bigger than a lot of people's resource zones that are growing marijuana. Why not let him grow marijuana on an R5 zoned property where he's got huge setbacks? That's something that the Rural Planning Commission needs to say. You can do R5 if it's zoned that. But it has to be having, 200-foot setbacks or whatever. And that's exactly totally possible. The guy can make a couple bucks and then develop it. That's certainly within the Rural Planning Commission's, Schmelzer's, purview to draft something that accommodates that. But if we just had voters say, we're going to prohibit RR5 cannabis production, then you don't get an opportunity to talk about those things. This just starts the opportunity to talk about those things in a meaningful way that actually is looking at making a code change.
I think this also helps, I guess just my last comment, it really helps our, not only the growers who want to know what can I and what can I not do, but it helps our realtors who are, should I sell an RR5 property? Or what's going on, we also have this with contractors. They don't know whether they should be going out to those sites to work on that. We have attorneys calling us quite often saying, what do I tell, what's going on? I have a client who wants to buy this property, I'm trying to advise them. So it's really, I know a lot of people view this as trying to prevent something, but it's really saying, let's just stop and figure out what's going on so we all know what to do in the future so we're not wasting money and resources. Let's just get the rules in place wherever they are and move forward.
I think we've got a bunch of different groups of people, and they're all kinds of different levels. I mean, there's some people that are growing 10 plants, there's people that are growing 5 acres, there's people that are growing, it's all over the map. And I'm not ever one for rules, but then again, I see people, I hear from the people also, I hear folks call in, And they said, okay, I'm completely surrounded. I'm the residential. I'm completely surrounded. I don't know if they're medical. I don't know if they're commercial. I don't know. I know that some of them don't speak English. Some of them do. I don't know if they don't own the place, so on and so forth. There's just so many gray areas out there that nobody knows who's doing what when. And right now, because it's only a couple of years old, go to OLCC, they don't know. You go to our planning commission, we don't know. Go to commissioner, they don't know. The sheriff doesn't know. We don't have the resources in order to patrol it and to police it and to make it legitimate. You know, I think legitimacy is what everybody wants. I think the growers all would love to be a member of the community. The growers that I talk to, and I talk to a number of them, and to me, they're not the problem. They are not the problem. But then again, I hear from people, and Commissioner Hare said, well, you can get a petition together and put it back on the ballot. Or there's another thing. I can pack up and leave. I've lived here all my life, and I'm not going to put up with this. I'm going to go to Montana or someplace where I'll just submit my next criteria will be, does cannabis grow here in Montana? No, it does not. Good. I'm here. I'm in. And, you know, that may be it. I've heard people say that. You know, there's a lot of saying what they're going to do. But starting the process, I elected to put this thing off because I want to see, I want everybody to have a fair shot at this thing of making the rules and having a say-so in the rules and at the state level. And whether it be in September, whether it be in December, whatever it is, starting this process today does not stop that. It doesn't look like it's going to hold up anything with OLCC because they're jammed up and they're not processing any of these anyway. Is that true?
I'll be honest with you. I'm surprised when the licenses come through how old they are. You know, we'll get some from 2017. We'll get some from 2015. So, and you know, can I say that's old?
So,
I don't know. Maybe it's
I don't want to cut discussion off, but we're varied from the topic. I really, we've got to, for expeditious reasons, we've got to get moving on this.
Okay.
And so, debating the finer points about who's holding it up, personally, I don't care. That's not my purview. I have jurisdiction over time, place, and manner. I have the authority to look at that. Whether or not we do it or not, I'm not sure. But starting the process is all we're talking about here today. We need to move it forward. And I apologize if I sound frustrated, but we're not discussing order number 2017 anymore, -034. And so without objection of the board, I'd like to move on, if we could.
I have one question.
Yep.
I want to clarify that those that have already been approved for a LUX and are waiting with the state are not prohibited from moving forward. You're simply sending them a letter saying that regulation may change. So if they're approved by the state and they choose to go forward, that's their right to do that.
Under this
according
order, that's my
order.
Interpretation as well.
Under this kind of order, yes.
Okay.
But you're not processing.
So it doesn't stop the 173 that have already been approved from moving forward if they choose to.
That's correct.
Okay. That are in the process of being approved. They haven't been approved, right?
They've been approved by us, 173.
Yeah, so
after that,
they're moved forward from us, correct?
The 86 that have been approved by OLCC can keep moving forward. 173 or whatever the number was that have applied and got their signature from us, they can continue to keep moving forward. It's those that have not made that application yet where we're saying no more applications until further notice. We have to get some rules in place.
Great. Item number 2B, approval of State of Oregon Housing and Community Service Department operating agreement and declaration of restrictive covenants for Ramsey Place. Mr. Hicks, you're listed on the agenda, but Mr. O'Hare could also be qualified in this matter. It's actually not that complicated.
I specifically remember Mr. Hicks volunteering Mr. O'Hare last week to be the speaker on this matter. You were out of the office, but we volunteered.
It doesn't pay to go on vacation. Well,
you'll never miss another meeting.
It's kind of a thankless job being our attorney here in Josephine County, so these are the sweet gifts. We're going to grant that.
Well, Arthur O'Hare, Finance Director, this is rather a dull and mundane thing compared to what we were talking about. So this is simply, in the briefest of terms, this is a contract from the State of Oregon Housing and Community Development that simply moves the requirement to provide 4 housing units of low income from our current Hugo Hills facility over to the Ramsey Place facility, both facilities being run by Options Environmental Health Provider. So the background of this, I can go over briefly, but but in essence, that's this is just taking the existing requirements that apply to Hugo and moving them over to Ramsey. Options Inc. looked over the contract. They have no problem with it. Our legal counsel looked over the contract. No problem with it. It's basically an existing contract. It's just moving from Hugo to Ramsey.
Thank you so much. Item number three is comments from citizens. About 3 minutes. Any subject you like. And we'll start right there. The gentleman in this gray shirt, we'll go to you next. Please just state
Raymond
your
name. Raymond Rosen from Matthews Place.
I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Raymond Rosen. We have a couple things. Number one is our road is in terrible shape, and we have a lot of speeding issues on our street. And we got together with the members of our street, decided that we'd like to have a 15-mile-an-hour signs put up on our road. The road is dangerous. We can't even have kids playing out there on bicycles and stuff because people, and it's a dead end road, it's only 1,000 feet long. It's an all day thing. And we're having some resistance with the county on that. Other issue we've had drug traffic. We had somebody we had to have remove off the street. And there's a house, 3250 River Highway. It's a known drug house. I talked to state police, and they said it's under watch. There's also prostitution that's going on at the end of our road. And I come over from that house. It's Angelique Horace, and she's been arrested several times. So I'd like to see something be done with that property. There's an illegal fifth wheel there. It doesn't have proper sanitation, and there's piles of trash that's next to it. Then the piles just keep getting bigger and bigger. And living next to the river, we have a lot of mass as it is, and this problem is escalating, including the drug traffic, which is now moved over to Riverwood. I know, Dan, Mr. DeYoung, you've been down the street. You see that it's terrible condition. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you very much. Might seem a little odd, but the board doesn't necessarily interact. We don't want to interrupt your 3 minutes, so just state what your question or comment is, and we'll try to readdress it at the end comprehensively. If you're not able to stick around like that kind of a question, Commissioner DeYoung is the liaison to Public Works, and I think I've heard mention of that he's looking at that issue, and so I hope that moves forward and we get some resolve on it. So thank you very much. Right there, second row, which is kind of the front row.
Gary Grove, the White Horse Park area. I don't want to see the exact area. We have a lot of growers in that area. I understand you're talking about it. This is taking a 3-year time period with all your rules and regulations. And I think it should move faster because what's happening is a lot of people are coming in, they're bulldozing, they're running equipment until 2 o'clock in the morning. And my main issue that I'm concerned about is a lot of us are on well water. And I know that is part of the regulations, that well water is not supposed to be used for commercial growth. But who's going to enforce that? You know, so we have to worry about our wells being contaminated. And like Mr. Young said about the decomposed granite, this last winter with all the rain, you know, nobody takes into consideration any of that erosion. And our roads were flooded, all our culverts were full of that decomposed granite. And I understand there's a lot of growers that are trying to do things properly. But then again, there's a lot of others that come in, and it's like, I've got a pocket full of money, I've got equipment, you try to stop me. You know, and they come in, they do what they want, when they want, how they want. The people that they draw to the area, the trimmers, you know, they're not residents like us. We live there all year long. A lot of us are retired people, and we moved to the rural area for peace and quiet. And it's just like, you know, this whole process is going on, and once they've dug in, how are you going to change it? It's like, well, I'm already here. What are you going to do? Are you going to just, they buy the licensings, they do what they need to do to be legal with OLCC and whatever they have to do, but they're there, and we still have to worry about our wells. Who's going to enforce that they bring in water trucks to fill their tanks, to water their commercial growth? You know, who is going to do this? I mean, yes, there's a lot of rules on the books already, but if they're not enforced, what good are they doing? Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Eric.
number one, about the lighting. Aircraft has to have shielded lighting. And if they're doing this in greenhouses, and I've been back when the greenhouses, that's what we did when we grew things during the winter months. It has to be shielded. You fly over, you're not supposed to be able to get that reflection on the planes. That's a rule. It's a federal law. I'll see if I can dig it up and help with that, but that's something they should be looking at. Reflected and direct light, that's what you're looking at. Those are the two different things. Secondary, I live in the city. We have neighbors. 80 plants. Now, does that distinguish somebody that's got maybe two people that they're growing for medical marijuana? 80 plants growing in the city, watering in the city, using a well in the city. By the way, the answer to the question possibly about the water is going to be the water master, and she will handle it. She's over here in this office and then over at the Medford office. Those under regulations are what they are. 80 plants. They were trimming, growing, packing, the light. Even in town, I mean, it's overwhelming. And I call it, it really starts heavy from 11:45. No lights out, no sound at 11. Inside the city limits. 3 blocks from the police department. Okay, that's where this is going on. Yet, the person in contact who just came down from Salem, who is now in the DEQ office in Medford, who's looking over all these rules and all these complaints, 62, just on the one property. I'm trying to be somewhat moderate about it, but that's not what my job is. And I didn't have stuff with the waters and the wells and the dams and all the other stuff. You can say all you want to about me, I really don't care. I've done it by documentation. I've done it by doing the documents and doing the historical searches. It's already been reported to the police. They've gotten there. The teams looked at it, all the other stuff. You say, it's like what the lady was saying about grows and this and that. I've done the investigation on this along with 3 other people, and we proved that this tracked all the way back to Crimea and money laundering in our community and in Jackson County. I'll leave that stand at that. I already got the information, got it printed out. One last thing. They talk about how marijuana won't hurt people, won't kill people. Here we go. 1942, the federal government grew marijuana in a distinguished way to help things work when the military was called out. Now, it reached out and touched me, okay? I don't care about somebody else. I've got the documented proof. Even the Veterans Administration listed cause of the cancer relative to the chemicals used to purify the marijuana used when they flew the hump as a flying tiger to arrest the heart to slow it down enough because they didn't have oxygen in the planes. It does kill people. Prove it by documents.
It's really important that we try to adhere to the 3 minutes because everybody gets that, and we'll get a little bit of lenience. Just kind of tie it up at the 3 minutes is really great. So, Mr. Rose.
Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Yep.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Joseph Rice.
It's still morning, although it feels that way.
Joseph Rice, Justin McCallum. A couple things I'd like to address, 3 items. First off, it's a little disturbing to be using a private contractor's crime statistics when the Sheriff's Department is mandated by state and federal law to be reporting those. I think we should be using official county statistics and an official report. Second, Commissioner Hare, I look forward to your briefing on your meeting with Secretary Zinke on Sunday. I was able to speak with him on Saturday. I think there's some very positive interactions being taken there with the Department of Interior and some of the issues we face here in the county. The main reason I'm here is speaking on Mountain View Place. I thank Commissioner DeYoung for coming out and seeing our issues. We've had drug trafficking, we've had prostitution, which is kind of surprising to find within Justin County. We have speeding, but we have developed a very robust neighborhood watch program. And this past Sunday, the neighbors did assemble, and we proposed the following. We, the residents of Mountain View Place, located in Justin County, petitioned the Justin County Board of Commissioners to designate and post our narrow residential roadway at 15 miles per hour. The following residents, which represent the majority of property owners and residents of Mountain View Place, have endorsed a 15-mile-per-hour speed limit. We believe this will enhance safety, allow safe transit, and improve quality of life within the neighborhood.
Mountain View Place is a dead-end, narrow roadway Josephine County maintains located between Rogue River Highway and Highway 199 south of Grants Pass. Originally built by a private individual, the purpose of the roadway is to provide access to privately owned property. The roadway does not provide any access to publicly managed lands, only the residential property. Currently, the roadway is in disrepair with multiple cracks, depression pumps, and uneven road surface, which makes transit of the roadway greater than 15 miles an hour hazardous and unsafe. A 15-mile-an-hour speed limit would allow for sufficient braking in the event of a vehicle backed into the roadway or other obstruction. ORS 811.105 paragraph 2A establishes on unposted streets the speed limit of 15 miles per hour. Mountain View Place is unposted, therefore, per the ORS, we are a 15-mile-an-hour zone. The residents of Mountain View Place have purchased regulatory-compliant 15-mile-an-hour speed limit signs at no cost to Josephine County. Therefore, the undersigned requests the Josephine County Board of Commissioners designate Mountain View Place as a 15-mile-an-hour speed zone established by the ORS and direct Josephine County Public Works to allow the posting of the signs. We have all the residents' signatures, and we also have the ORS for reference. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Yes, the girl with sunglasses. If this is your first or second time, I don't have people's last names.
Okay, Cassie Cooper. I'm with Selma. I also own land in Cave Junction off of June Way, and I work at a rec farm in Tacoma. I feel kind of uniquely qualified having all three of those things for the Illinois Valley. And one of the things I want to say is when you guys were running the numbers, it said that there were 27 OLCC licensed rec farms on our island. With all these complaints coming in, I wonder how many of them are actually from rec farms and what this ordinance will actually do to slow those down. I'm also wondering if you have to decide as a medical grower whether or not you want to be involved in this, you know, OHA or OLCC by December 1st, if you limit the LUX applications for those farmers, how are they going to have their applications submitted to the OLCC before the January 1st deadline? I feel like that's probably 1,500 farms in that area that will be impacted by that decision. At the end of the property where I live in, or where I own in Cave Junction, there's a rec farm. They have had complaints about speeding. They've had complaints about taking water out of the waterway. And they have addressed those in a fantastic fashion. They've re-graveled our road. They've slowed down. I own the easement that they used to get to their property, and we put a 10-mile-an-hour please sign out, and they respected it. They collapsed part of the road over the winter. They fixed it. They had a dam up on the creek. They put it down. So everything that we as residents in the area have addressed with this particular legal farm has happened. Most of the time, I think a lot of the complaints are coming from medical grows or illegal grows posing as medical grows, and that they are giving these 27 rural residential farms who have put a tremendous amount of investment into the farm, a tremendous amount of time. The employees at the farm where I work, we make good money, we have good working conditions. Working before in this industry, it was not like that. It was under the table. If you got paid at all, you lived in unsanitary environments on the properties of these people who were growing more plants than they should and polluting the area. And the standard for the rec farms in particular at the state level is high. You have to report where your water comes from, where your power comes from. They hold you to the highest level of all the grows, I believe. So I would just like to remind the commission that there's a big problem, but I think that we're focusing on the wrong group of people and that it's somewhat short-sighted in taking care of the issues that the residents have.
I don't typically respond. Ms. Cooper, you made really good points. Thank you for coming here today. Really debating the nuances of this is not really the subject, although you're able to speak on any subject. I think you're right. We do hear a lot of issues about medical. I don't think we have the authority to regulate medical. So a lot of people look at the county as having all of these tools in the tool chest. We have three, so to speak, as an example. And so we're just trying to move forward with the things we can. It's not as though, if in a perfect world, we had it up to us about, you know, we could go individually and figure out the ones that are the problem children and deal with them individually, but we really don't have, unfortunately for us, it's kind of, you know, a broad stroke as far as, and then we want to get that broad stroke as detailed as possible to address those specific concerns that you raised and take into account the ones that are doing the right thing. So I just feel like I should say that because I think there's going to be other people that are wanting to say pretty much exactly the same thing that you've said. We've heard it a number of different times, and you're absolutely right. It's not our intent to try to do anything negative to people who are following all the rules and don't have a problem with their neighbors. It's just we have to do something to start that conversation and move it forward. And what that looks like at the end of the day is really probably a long drawn-out conversation yet to happen. So hopefully that kind of, if there's other people who want to speak on that subject. Mr. Sullivan.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mark Sullivan, Selma, Oregon. Here's a novel idea. A government that governs least governs best. I think you'll find, in time, if all these people move here to grow and more and more and more, the price is going to drop so low that they're going to leave. That's the free market at work. You're all Republicans. You should understand that. Regarding Commissioner Hare, who is a EFU grower, I urge him again to recuse himself from any vote on RR5 restrictions, and I urge the other county commissioners to share that view. All you need to do is call the State Board of Ethics on this. Now a matter of the Constitution. I applied for a meeting at the Cape Junction building to have a cannabis town hall forum that you're all invited to. Unfortunately, within an hour of paying my fee, I was denied. I later found out that Commissioner DeYoung, 2 or 3 weeks before, had a meeting with anti-cannabis groups in the very same building I was denied. I was not the only one denied. The Cannabis Farmers Alliance was also denied. Now, these are issues of freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. This is not an accidental error. Does this reflect county commissioners or county departments' prejudice? I don't know. As city councilors, Commissioner DeYoung and Morgan never voiced opposition to outdoor groves. One would hope that they would have a more enlightened attitude now that they're county commissioners. The denial of my application is extremely troubling. Now I'm told I can do it, but we're going to have our meeting next Sunday at the Selma Center. My question, 2,800 growers who grow 13 or more plants, some of them do. Are they going to be banned from growing because they have to file a tracking system, metric tracking system? These are not recreational growers, they're medical growers. And if these very same medical growers, if the OHA disappears, are they going to be able to transition to a micro canopy? We're talking a very small footprint. Those are very important. Ultimately, remember this. Laws must be made easier for people to comply with, not harder. Do you wish to preside over a county that would clearly be in violation of the Cole Memorandum? We won't be known for growing marijuana. We'll be known by federal raids. I don't think you want that. We all must be good neighbors. There's no doubt about that. And I urge people that are concerned to attend Selma Center, July 23rd, 4 p.m., commissioners are invited, we'll have some speakers, and you'll hear from cannabis growers and patients and people who live in the area. Thank you very much.
Anyone else? Yes, I'm George.
I feel like I just. There's
no order. It's totally.
You've been here as long as everyone else.
Arbitrary. We'll get to everybody.
Bernie McDonald, I live in Cape Junction. I'm actually in the process of moving right now, but I'm kind of in the Holland Loop area. I came to this area originally as a farmer. I am an Eagle Scout. I'm a student at RCC. I plan to go into education in Oregon. I'm a vested community member in this state. I've really come here and found a lot of good and a lot of benefit to this community. I've also seen a lot of terrible things. Machines at 2 a.m., green lights lighting up the sky, greenhouses lighting up the sky, and really there's a lot of danger to wildlife and the really epic, amazing scenery and environment that we have, especially in the Illinois Valley. A lot of the runoff and a lot of the nitrogen dumping into the rivers. We can see really good examples of where that's going to go from Humboldt, from Mendocino, from the Mississippi River and the Gulf. I do think that efforts to regulate runoff are really important. The lighting, really important. I think that that's crucial, and I think that as community members, we need to find some way to regulate that ourselves, but I do think it's important to get that from an actual legislated, clearly written format as well. I feel like the water protection really is going to be a super important thing. I feel like runoff on your neighbor's property is one thing. Runoff back into well water, again, terrible, awful. There's no reason that people shouldn't have drinking water so that we can grow more pot plants. That doesn't make sense. And so I think, again, really the environmental side of this is going to be a crucially important, lasting legacy of what happens here, and I really want to make that point. But I don't think that it's fair to say that, you know, pot is bringing all the bad people or bringing all the good people. This really is a giant mixed bag, and trying to lay a blanket over all of these people is going to be really tricky and difficult. That is essentially actually what I had to say. I think that the fencing rules are really good. I think these butt ugly tarp fences are garbage, and I think that there's other ways to get around that that don't require 60-foot setbacks, 30-foot setbacks. A lot of the setback rules, too, I think are really tricky. There's no saying that this corner of your property that happens to border your neighbors isn't the best part of your property to use for a grow, whereas something that does fit the setback rules isn't necessarily going to make any sense for an environmental sense or a neighborly sense. And so I would like to urge a lot of caution. I feel like waiting until there is a commission of people from both sides to get together and actually figure out what makes sense and what the real brass tacks and the issues are is going to really pay off in the long run as well. And I feel like really the rec farms, honestly, is the first chance in this state that you've had to get tax money out of what is a booming industry. And we can really use that tax money in this county. We could use that tax money in this state. We could use that to improve education, which we all know is sort of lacking. Access to health care, access to government protection, more sheriffs, more even state attention. But I think that keeping this dialogue open and between both sides is going to be pretty important.
Yep, that's the...
You know, and it doesn't make any sense that people that move here to retire or...
Thank you very much, sir. You don't get to start a new subject. You're good.
Cool.
In the back? Covered a lot of ground, sir.
My name is Robert King. I live in Merlin. I came for the fishing, the fencing issue, but I heard something that disturbed me even more was options approving for Hugo Hills to move to town. I was a Josephine County mental health worker. The reason why it was out at Hugo was because if people in Josephine County get one facility within the city limits, because they have PSRB clients, which are mentally ill people that have done criminal acts, have worked at Hugo Hills. The reason why they shut down Hugo Hills was because they didn't have law enforcement. Now there's law enforcement. There's no reason to move that facility to Ramsey Street. I'm telling you, they're going to have to put up all fencing. It's going to be a whole different line of clientele that's being there right now. The clientele that's there right now is mundane compared to what the clientele they're going to bring into the city. So I urge you to look at that fully and investigate that. Thank you.
Something to happen.
Hi, my name is Chris Bevler. I also work for Eastport Cultivators. I came to this valley, the Illinois Valley, about 8 years ago, and you know, it's been a struggle to find consistent work. I worked as a trimmer, and you know, whether or not you get paid or when you get paid and the working conditions and all that, you know, it's a guessing game. And I love this valley and I love living here, but it's hard to find steady good work, and Eastport Cultivators has given me that. I have a taxable income. I can contribute to the community, and it's great. And it's a professional, fun environment to work in. It's very safe. They follow all the guidelines. And I just wanted to say that I feel that it's probably not the best idea, a little short-sighted, to ban all recreational groves on rural residential, because I feel like the place I work is, they're really considerate of the neighbors. They talk with all the neighbors. They address all the concerns. The problem I've seen in Cape Junction and Illinois Valley have mostly been from medical growers who come in and aren't very considerate of where they're living. They're just trying to get there to make their money and get out. And that's where I've seen the most problems with lights running all night and generators running all night and all that stuff. I feel like the people in the community who are committed to being community members and doing things right, you know, they're generating a lot of money and they're good people, and I don't feel like they should really have to be economically, you know, disadvantaged by any kind of bans. Just my personal opinion. I guess that's all I really want to say. I just hope you guys can form a commission or something to really look at all these issues, because I don't think, the gentleman was saying, that throwing a blanket over, you know, all rural recreational groves and all of this is going to really work. I think it's really going to take a lot of talking through it and thinking about it and getting more of a consensus from the constituents. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Dan Lockhorn, Williams, Oregon, 540 Laughlin Lane. Mr. Schmelzer, I appreciate all of your work and your effort. We've been going at this for a while. Not my first time before y'all, and I appreciate you being here and hearing. I am the direct recipient of the ever-so-regulated REC market, and that's WREK market, directly across the street, has changed grades of the property and has brought floodwaters onto my organic lavender farm, canceling this year's crop from last winter's rain. Three times we were flooded. There's been changes of the grade, changes of the property. None of it was regulated. There was multiple violations of electrical code, plumbing, construction, which is now under the advice of the building department. Again, I sit there and say, this is not such a regulated market. This is not people who go in and abide by the law. They went in and did what they wanted to do and said, we'll catch up later. Sorry. That's not what happened. They're not catching up. They're not performing. They're not being adhered to. This is serious damage to my property. My children's inheritance is gone because of the flooding. This is a direct financial impact from this market in rural residential property. It was gone right on through, and not one bit was ever adhered to. Took out culverts, put in smaller culverts, raised their grades, changed the floodplain. Massive amount of damage on 8 pieces of property down our lane from one wrecked grow. I don't have a problem with residential property being used in a commercial adventure, as long as it adhered to and at least mildly complies to what the environment looks like. Micro tier 1 and 2, absolutely. Tier 1, 2, or 3, 40,000 square feet, massive greenhouses, huge fences, fans going way late into the night. This isn't acceptable in residential property. These are things that need to be looked at. Banning all recreational growing from residential property, I don't think is the right direction. You're not allowing somebody, as my daughters, to come in and say, 15, 20 years from now, say, we can grow something other than lavender, other than vegetables. Ah, look, cannabis is going this direction. Allow them to say, micro tier, sure. Something small, something manageable, something that doesn't impact neighbors massively. It's not okay to have a massive grow inside of a residential neighborhood. Not at all. Would you take it? The light sky issue. Drive past 238 and Williams Highway in snow and look at that massive grow, rocket silos on their sides at night with fog. If I was those neighbors, I would have been livid. You could not walk outside without saying, it's daylight. And that's a EFU grow. Right next to residential property. Shadowbox Farm, you might have heard. Look into it. Thank you for your patience.
Mr. Gendron, then we'll move over here to you, Mr. Ford.
Thank you, Commissioners. Peter Gendron, Sunny Valley. Been in Joseph King County on our property for almost 20 years now. We've already addressed a lot of these things. I want to bring up a couple of points that really haven't been gone into in depth. The large number of growers that are currently in the medical program on RR. That's been a staple in Josephine County since, well, basically since 1998 when Measure 67 passed. The rules in Jackson County are in fact different. Most other counties in the state, besides Jackson, do permit development of farm use crops on rural residential properties. For purposes of this discussion going forward, to clarify, when we're talking about OLCC licensees, the growers that are going to be transitioning on RR properties are most likely going to be what's called micro canopies. So we have four regulated growing production tiers under OLCC. Micro 1 and Micro 2 are designed for what are currently small 24 and 48 plant gardens in the city and are properly referred to as gardens. Using the terminology farming, when it applies to the Tier 1 and Tier 2 grows at 20 and 40,000 square feet of sun grown respectively, is the proper terminology. So when you're looking at developing regulations on RR, I would appreciate it if you would look at the micros as being gardens and the large tiers as being actual farms, because there is a difference in the way the growers approach development on those lands. There is a difference in the way we grow. I have to point out that if we were having this discussion about 60 blueberry plants that I have in my yard, everybody would think it's absurd. They'd think it would be ridiculous to treat 80 asparagus plants this way. Cannabis isn't the only crop we cultivate, and it doesn't take up the majority of our land either. To one more point, I've heard the majority argument made several times regarding Measure 17.81. And yes, there's no denying that almost 64% of voters that turned up to vote voted in favor of 17.81. The number that isn't being discussed is 46.5% of voters actually bothering to turn in a ballot, which gives you an underwhelming minority of 30% of the county that thought it was worth addressing this issue last May. Half of that being a Grants Pass population, not even directly affected by what's going on where I live, out in the county, 15 miles from town. You have a really underwhelming 15% of the rural residents that thought this was a major issue. And we should be looking at that when we're moving forward also. The last thing I would like to do is ask you to assemble the Cannabis Advisory Committee as soon as possible so that you can have people that are well-versed in these topics address the issues and report back to you formally. And I'll be writing a letter addressing the OLCC issue, micro and the macro issues. Thank you.
Mr. Ford, I think you were next. And Mr. Hart.
Larry Ford, 136 Ferry Road, Grants Pass. Well, I think these issues we've been talking today are important. My one suggestion is that the planning department and the DCC look at the fencing issues beyond our parks. I live on a woodlot. We have farming areas below on the road I live on. We have people that are growing cannabis that have taken the trees out, and they're using those trees for fencing. You can't see them from the road, but they cause the same issues. The same with if people are using old cars and refrigerators for fencing and burns. They cause issues no matter where they're at. The timber that's being cut and the root balls are left, there is definitely a fire hazard. The metal that's being used eventually starts to deteriorate, and it will affect our quality of our water and our county. These should not be allowed on any properties, no matter what the zoning is in this county. And the last one is these black plastic fences. I'm sorry, they last a year. If they're not taken down and taken care of, they become an eyesore. They blow on the neighbor's property. We've had that happen. They're ugly. I'm sorry, they just shouldn't be allowed. I'd rather see the green plant growing in my neighbor's yard or down the road than these ugly black plastic fences that they erect. And this should not be allowed on any properties at all. So if you would take that into your purview and look at the fencing issues on other properties other than rural residential, I think that would be a great step forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hart?
in Josephine County.
Perfect.
You name it, I've got it covered.
That's great.
A lot of the problems we have today is because the rules and regulations weren't in effect before this whole thing started on campus. And delaying putting rules into effect any longer is just going to prolong the hurt of what's going on. So I would urge you to develop the set of regulations as soon as possible. But until then, as we heard in the presentation, a lot of people are going to have to transition from OMPP to OLCC. So in this board order, the way it is written, to suspend all LUC statements right now is going to put people in a catch-22 position that they can't change. The other thing is, in state law, it says you're to process an application based on the rules in effect at the time the application is submitted. Since we don't have rules and wouldn't have until at least December, to refuse to sign a LUC statement saying that it's prohibited now, I think it's going to leave the county open to some kind of recourse for people that want to try and finish off what they need to get going. There's a lot of them are in process right now. So I would recommend that you strike paragraph 4 of the proposed memo today. So any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Great. Thank you very much. Anyone else? Yes, turn over here.
Hello, I'm Kevin McCabe. I have rural residential property over in the Robinson Bridge area. I have a land use compatibility statement right now, and I'm in the process of getting an OLCC license. A lot of that stuff that you were talking about being good neighbors, fencing, light issues and stuff, I've already addressed with my neighbors just by walking over there and talking to them. So yes, I intend on not glowing in the dark. I intend on having good relations with my neighbors. I have a fear that you're going to end up sending a lot of these current medical families that are currently growing legally and trying to stay legal, that you're going to end up pushing them back into an illegal market. The 12 plant max without tracking is still enough to grow plenty to make it appealable to an illegal market grower. If you make it really hard for people to transition and do the right thing, it's going to put more people into the illegal market. I'm also worried that if I proceed forward, that you're going to pull the carpet out from under me and say, all rural residential will be banned. Doesn't matter if you already have a license or you already have a LUCs. It will just get pulled out from under me, and it's making me really worried. And I'm trying really hard to do the right thing, to be completely legal, state and federally and locally. And it's just become a big battle, obviously, you know. I guess that's it. Thank you.
Anyone else? We almost said everybody, so I'll bring it back to the board. Couple of comments, anyone?
Yeah.
I'll start with Commissioner DeYoung.
That's right.
If that's okay. Commissioner DeYoung?
I'm interested in just your heart striking paragraph 4. I'm trying to get to it right now.
Yeah, it's not at all the same. I was going to address the information the gentleman spoke of with moving the Hugo Hills mental health facility to town. Options came to the county a couple months ago and stated they were no longer going to be using that facility. And they had slowly moved residents to, in that facility to other facilities. and it has been vacant, and the county owns the property. And so one of the stipulations on the financing that we received that property was that four of the rooms had to remain indigent and had to be used for mental health facilities. Well, it's sitting vacant, and our mental health agency says they're not going to use it, so we were stuck with what we could do with that building. We were able to take the restrictions of the building at Hugo Hills, which has four rooms that have to be indigent and a mental health facility, and the finance restrictions, we were able to move to a different county-owned building that's already operating as a mental health facility and serves some indigent folks. So essentially, it frees up the restrictions on the Hugo Hill property from having to be a mental health facility with four indigent beds. So we as a county are not moving the high-risk mental health population to another location. That was done months ago by the mental health organization to find the right placement for those folks. This was simply a financial decision over the financing, over the building, and that's why our finance director is who gave the presentation. It was financial stipulation only. So I have other comments as well, but I was going to limit that one.
No, that was really good. I don't have anything to add. I think that's the Oedipus of why we did that. And frankly, it had already been in motion, and it was more of a financial element to keep the restrictions, accommodate the existing continuing restrictions on that. So, Commissioner Dion?
Yeah, going back to paragraph 4. It says, beginning with the date of this order, the Community Development Planning Director shall cease accepting and suspend processing Oregon OLCC requests for land use compatibility status, blocks submitted for all rural residential zones in Josephine County until further order of this order. One of the things I think that we are trying to encourage, and you make a pretty good point there, how much of these are going to go underground, number one, and we're trying to encourage people to get under the thumb, because that's a thumb of OLCC. They have all the money. They get all the tax money. We've had a couple people talk here today about, oh, well, the tax money is coming into Josephine County, we're paying for schools. That isn't happening. It all goes to the state right now, and the state keeps it. So the state is unaware of what our situation in Josephine and Jackson County here is as far as the amount of groves we have that we have locally that are crowded around residents that have been here forever. I have an issue with the fences, but that's a take up with the state. I'll take that up with the state. But I think our intent is to get this thing under a, instead of being at the county level, where we can't enforce it. We've got so many complaints, we cannot enforce them. So I want the state to hear loud and clear of those complaints. I also, if I want to encourage people to get to, you know, they can move their grow over and whatnot. They're already in, they already have a land use compatibility state that they're in. It hasn't been processed yet, but they're in the wheel. But I don't know if stopping everybody until December, I think there's some merit in saying let's leave the Lux component out of it for right now, just that we're going to stop sending Lux to OLCC. I think when they see the amount of applicants they get in the next 4 months, I think that's going to be an eye-opener to Governor Brown. I don't think Governor Brown understands the situation out here. I don't think anybody does. Until it hits their front doorstep. And then OLCC is going to say, my God, I have to go out and field these complaints from the people, not you guys. There's probably a lot of you. I've met a lot of you that are within, you know, Peter, if everybody could do what you're doing out there in Sunny Valley, we wouldn't be here. But it's not you, and you know that. We all know that. I'm seeing that there's basically a common enemy of the unruly and unlawful people that don't want to comply. They're not interested in walking through this. They're not interested in going to see Juma. They don't want to see the OLCC. That's our enemy, not the legitimate grower. Because other than the legitimate growers that I've seen, oh yeah, they might have a dispute with their neighbor, but they take it up neighbor to neighbor, community. And right now, we don't have the resources to control the enormity of this industry. But I think if we eliminate number 4, I think the state's going to get loud and clear real quick. And we're still starting this process. We're still going to start the process, and I think the process needs to happen. The state says it needs to happen. The rules aren't yet made yet. Kind of. And I think there's a time. time element that that they'll be made soon enough. But in my mind, I have no problem striking number four right now. Today, in order to move on. Julie, have a comment?
Yeah.
I don't know. I asked Chairman.
Yeah, sure. That's fine. You can absolutely.
In regard to item number four, Mr. Hart is right. We process the applications, the rules in effect at the time of application. This is not a pony application. These lots are not pony applications. If somebody came in for a permit for a greenhouse today, we'd process them under the rules that are for greenhouses. But this is talking about what you're doing here is giving me a directive. It's an order. And you are my boss. I will do as you say. So if you give me an order to stop processing the lots, I will. However, I will, and I have to, continue to process applications based on the rules today for our codes. A lux is not one of, in our codes. It's not on any of our rules that when somebody submits something, I have to process it that day or the rules in effect. That is a state document. It's completely separate. We do, and we always will, process applications made to us reflective of that are applicable to our codes based on the rules in effect of our codes at that time.
Okay, that's a question I have. Do we have the authority to stand in front of somebody that wants to make a state application?
Pardon me?
Do we have the authority to stand in the way of somebody that wants to make a state application to OLCC to transfer over from medical to OLCC? Do we have that? That's what I'm troubled with.
Sure. That's a legal answer for Wally. It is my understanding that he has already determined that, yes, we may. That's why we are here today. It has been approved.
I think we should hear from Mr. Hicks on that finer point. I mean,
my question is, what is the purpose? A lot of work has gone into the state rule, the state law. We realize that 91 was passed without no ground. Here's a football. There's the goalpost. Make up your own rules.
Let's get a specific question on item number four from Councillor Hicks.
Yeah, well,
whether or not the board has the authority to deny or not sign off on a land use compatibility request from the state on behalf of an applicant based on the idea that either the board has put a moratorium on that issue or developing rules. Because Mr. Hart has said that you have to act on a land use compatibility application from the state on behalf of a client based on the rules governing that applicant on the day of application. And if that's the case, then I don't believe we have the ability to restrict a lux, but it's in this order, and so let's see what we have.
Okay. So the lux is in place because OLCC is waiting for the county to determine that the property is compliant with county codes. And so to the extent you have the authority and the question is asking to stand in the way, I think for OLCC, they're expecting easy to do. They're not going to process the application unless the lux gets turned in, verifying that the property is in compliance.
But are we consistent with their intent to say you're reflecting current code and law in denying or not processing a lux? It's not at the discretion of whether or not we like the person, where they're from, all of these things that people talk about. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter if you're from Jackson County, Florida, another country. Under the law, our code restricts, certain zones. Like, for instance, you couldn't get a lux if you were applying on industrial property prior to that text amendment. And that's something that's defensible. There's a reason for it. You didn't process the lux because it wasn't compliant with our code. You couldn't do an agricultural... You couldn't produce on industrial land using an ag commodity. We don't have a restriction right now. We have an order to start the process of looking at possibly restricting. I don't know that it's defensible, in my opinion. I know we're kind of talking about liability here in public, which is not always a good thing, but frankly, it's not rocket science. You either do or you don't. And I feel like I agree that number four is probably not defensible. So, is it? I mean, where is it that I guess the OLCC is letting the discretion go to counties Based on what? There's no law. We've been processing them. That's another thing. So we're changing it midstream. Where's the change in the law that gave us the authority to do that? I think I've struggled with this one for a while. And I think in earlier conversations I was all about, you know, taking the Lux component out of there. Really, it was to the benefit of people who were applying for a Lux. That's what I saw it for, saying, look, we don't know where this is going to go. It may go all the way to the extreme of the question we asked, or it may do nothing. There could be an ability to grandfather these people. And it's just, why don't you hold off for a couple of months till we figure this out? And I don't know that that changes giving them a letter, the same letter they're going to get if they were approved for it today, as they were requesting one tomorrow, says, we don't know where this is going to go. So you should be on notice that there's a very good chance. That's what I would recommend us do, but unless
you... I've been present. I mean, I think most of, most of the discussions, and I think you get to the same place by doing that from where you started.
And we don't get sued.
I don't know. Yeah, probably not.
You might get sued just for the fun of it. That doesn't... You're not ever protected from being sued.
There would be no validity to somebody saying, we're just telling you this is what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, there's, so if someone wants to assert that they've got a property right and they're entitled to due process, which is notice an opportunity to be heard, I mean, they need to notify people.
Right.
So I think within context, like I said, like just a moment ago, I think you probably get to the same place where you were, where the discussions had generally been circling around heretofore by adjusting it in that direction.
Okay.
Are there any other questions?
Now, the only other thing I would, if we hadn't said strike four, my suggestion was to be adding amendment that said, unless submitted by a current OMMP licensee transferring to OLCC. So there's no restriction of those trying to go from the OHA to OLCC.
Could you, I'm sorry, can you reiterate that?
Well, just leaving four intact and adding at the end, unless submitted by a current OHA licensee transferring to OLCC. But them making the recommendation to strike gets there just the fine, just the same. I was just trying to come up with a way to not mess with people meeting that September 1st metric deadline and the December 1st notification deadline if we're not allowing Lux and they're wanting to switch.
Well, it's creative, and it really goes to the intent of people not putting in new infrastructure in a five in an RR zone. You know, that's what I'm really worried about, is somebody's coming here and they're not really paying attention, and they just start, you know, putting stuff in the ground, and it's like, wait a second, hello, we're looking at this, maybe you should just hold off for a second. But if they're transferring, all that infrastructure is already in. I mean, it's they're operating, and so that's not a bad suggestion. I think you're acquiescing to just removing number four, listen to everybody, you know, and notice. I mean, it's going to be, who knows what it's going to be like.
Honestly, I still think saying those that are currently there can transfer, allow them to transfer. Let's get the Cannabis Advisory Committee on the ground running and get some stuff in place. But we want people to do the legitimate routes. We want people to be following the law and being good neighbors. We want the process to work the way it's supposed to with the state regulations. So I'm not opposed to striking that.
I don't want to get the process bogged down by undue litigation because we didn't process a Lux and we didn't have the authority to do it, and we're refined and we have to come back here and change an order after that process is underway, when our intent is carried forward by rolling everybody into number five and we just give them notice. So do we have to change, if we were to do that, do we have to change number five to just say, not just notifying all licensed OLCC, but all those who are pursuing a Lux to be notified that we're, you know, to that effect? I think we should put something in there, but my brain at this point in the day is not really going to be able to craft the language.
Clarity will pay off to the extent you can really work that language.
Anybody pursuing a Lux needs to be notified that we're doing this in RR. That's the intent.
No wrong question with that.
Yeah.
I mean, does that make sense as to why? Because people will know what they're getting into.
Oh, I'm all for having more communication, not less.
I think the intent that the state has in changing the law is that there is a vehicle, there's a path that the people who want to be legitimate can go to. And if you just say, well, we're going to take everybody on blanket like number four does, and they say, we're going to cut it off right here, I don't think that's succeeding in what they want to do. think their intent is to move people under OLCC and maybe get rid of these questionable, and I've talked to a lot of folks that say, you know, hey, we're commercial, we've got cameras and everything, but the medical doesn't have anything. And I think their purpose is to move it underneath OLCC so that there's a stricter set of rules. And I think this is the green rush of everybody wanting to move here and buy every piece of ground there is, it may be over just with this right here in Josephine County.
Because
there will be some rules. Well, that you'll get, you know, you may get we're going to attract a different type of grower rather than the one that we're hearing about today that actually wants you to blade off every mountain and set up shop. And I don't care what the water master says. I don't care where my dirt's going. I don't care where our runoff's going. I don't even care what you think. I'm not from here. I don't care about your community. And that's one I want
to
weed out.
I hate to cut you off, but we're coming up against the time
deadline.
I'm going to make a recommendation that we strike number 4 in the motion to approve this item. And then we amend item number 5 to read as such. The community development planning director shall send notice to those applicants in rural residential zones who have been provided with a completed LUX and those pursuing a land use compatibility statement in RR reviewed by the county. So just that anybody who has one, who's pursuing one, are notified.
I just one thing to note on the topic that is of note. The state is creating a cannabis commission, and they're the ones that will be proposing the regulations December 15th. And so hopefully the state will be a better partner and stop, and have a body that they can listen to all these issues to and for the counties to discuss. But that's down the road.
I have absolutely zero faith in the state looking out after Josephine County. I have never met an OLCC person. That 91 implementation committee, our representatives walked away not being heard on a single issue. I don't mind being the youngest guy on the board, but y'all thinking that the state's going to do or care about Josephine County
at
I
didn't say
all.
They're going to fix it. I just
I
said
have
they're
no expectation
it.
In anything. We need to do what we need to do here, and the state can get in line, in my opinion. I'm charged with making sure that the citizens of Josephine County are okay. I don't care what the state does. Is this whole deal about they're going to give us tax revenues after the revenue and stuff they pay themselves off? It's the company store. They are never going to pay themselves back. They're going to roll all these other people in. The bureaucracy is going to grow. And the revenues never keep up. Revenues have exceeded everybody's expectations, and they still have a shortfall. So sorry if I'm a little frustrated, but no, the state doesn't care about Josephine County at all. We kind of probably need to move forward. So if there's any expedited comments that need to be made on citizens, we probably should do that because we got to vote on some of these things, I think.
I would just say that if you guys haven't applied for the Cannabis Advisory Committee and think it'd be helpful, I welcome the applications.
There was one comment that I need to reference. So it's just 100% false. I'm not an EFU grower. I'm not a grower at all. I've never grown. I probably won't ever grow. It's just not something in my wheelhouse that I'm going to do. Outside of my areas of expertise. So the ex parte or conflict of interest potential in this issue is not even existent. I am an investor in an industrial hemp company. We do most of our production outside of Josephine County. Our largest farm is in Klamath Falls right now, and that's really where we're going to continue to focus because there's no conflict, as you can't grow medical or recreational cannabis in Klamath County. So it really has no effect over here. It doesn't really matter. Actually, the conflict is probably more consistent with that. I have really good, if not best friends, who are growing under the medical program, who are going to need to go into the OLCC program, and they're on RR. And so I'm fully aware that maybe we aren't friends after whatever this happens, or it all works out, and I'm looking at it through their lens, people I absolutely know, and we're going to get it worked out. So I just think that once you get down that path, who doesn't know somebody who's doing something that's going to be affected by this? I would challenge any one of these board members who's related to half the town and knows everybody who lives here who isn't personally involved in this kind
My
of situation.
My relatives are all growing and producing, so
yeah.
It's, but they're not within the Ethic Commission's boundary of family to make it a conflict.
Okay, so I think we've got that one, our first item on the administrative calendar, kind of refined, and I think in a positive way that's going to put people on notice and isn't going to get us into hot water. So I appreciate Commissioner DeYoung and everybody spearheading on that. Maybe we could entertain a motion on the administrative calendar, item 2A, which is approval of order number 2017-034 in the matter of authorizing the Josephine County Community Development / Planning Director to initiate a land use application to amend the Rural Land Development Code to provide for regulation to prohibit marijuana production in rural residential zones and suspending processing of requests for land use compatibility statements Lux has submitted for all rural residential zones.
So I would move that we adopt this order, amending that we strike paragraph 4 and amend 5 to include those pursuing LX.
Second.
Before you second that, Commissioner DeYoung, I think in the title of the order,
strike the title
portion. Strike that portion after the semicolon, and it reads suspending processing of requests for land use compatibility statements. It's just how the agenda read, so it can be changed. And so you'd approve everything prior with the amendment that you made. And if Commissioner DeYoung would accept that friendly clarification,
yes, sounds very good.
That's the intent of the board.
We don't want to get it started down the wrong path by the time.
I didn't feel I had the authority to change the title and the agenda. However, by taking it out of it, we're good, so long as the end result is that we're not prohibiting folks from going through the legal paths to do
that. Yeah. So we'll discuss that. You have the authority to do anything and everything you want at any given time. You're a board member. Anything you want to do, but we'll move forward. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries. Order number 2017-034 as amended. Item number 2B is approval of the State of Oregon Housing and Community Service Department for operating agreement and declaration of restrictive covenants for Ramsey Place. Item number 2B.
I move that we adopt this agreement. Approve the agreement.
I second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Thanks for the clarification, Commissioner Morgan. Couldn't have done it better. Nothing further. Please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries. Item number 4 is approval of the consent calendar made up of first item is 4A, amendment number 3 to lease agreement with CASA of for Jackson County, who operates Josephine County's CASA, for the lease of county property at 304 Northwest D Street in Grants Pass. We lease this property at no cost right now, but are looking to bring them into the fold on how we appropriate costs of facilitating space to all of our programs and departments within the county on a parallel basis with this program. So that's the process over a couple of years, probably 3 or 4. We incrementally increase their rate to eventually, I think, over 3 or 4 years, paying the full assessed value and rate comparable with all other county programs under the facilities department. Anything on that? Item 4B is intergovernmental agreement contract number 3622-17 between Josephine County and the State of Oregon for control point data collection. This has to do with our assessor's department. It's an ongoing process of really getting a digitization of our lot lines and all of the tax lots in Josephine County. We are breaking it up. Would you guys mind taking your conversation outside? Thanks. We're breaking it up into achievable outcomes that we do this incrementally over time. There's 49,000 different tax lots in Josephine County. It's a big job, and we're getting that underway with this grant right now through the assessor's office. Item number 4C is interagency agreement between Josephine County and the City of Grants Pass for the purchase of transit services. It's over a biennium, a two-year agreement of 2017-2019 Public Transit Division Discretionary Grant Award.
Yeah, this is the City of Grants Pass receives a grant 5310 elderly disabled transit funding from ODOT. They use the funds by purchasing general public transit services from Josephine County Transit. This agreement is for 2 years. The city pays the local match of $31,475. Total funds available for the biennium is $306,475. These funds are used to pay for transit services within the urban growth boundary. These funds purchase 3,000 revenue hours of service out of a total of 23,906 hours being provided by Josephine County. So it's just basically they pick up the match. We receive a little over $300,000 from ODOT for transportation inside the urban growth boundary.
Perfect. Couldn't have said it better if he was Scott Chansey himself. Transit Director. Item number 4D is an intergovernmental agreement between Josephine County and Oregon Department of Aviation providing a $10,241.57 grant for the purpose of pavement maintenance at the Illinois Valley Airport during the summer of 2017, right here in town. Commissioner Morgan is liaison to the airports.
Yes, this is exciting. We get to repave the airport. Every 3 years, the FAA provides block grants to the Oregon Department of Aviation for all our airports to be repaved every 3 years. And it's just our turn. And so we did this previously with the Grants Pass Airport. It's now time for the Illinois Valley Airport. And there's no cost to the county. So this is entirely provided through grant money federal government has provided the state.
Perfect. Any further on the consent calendar? I'd entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar items 4A through D.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion on this? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes. Motion carries 3-0. Any other items that should properly come before the board at this time? If not, we'll move into item number 6, which is matters from commissioners. What matters to you, Commissioner DeYoung?
Well, it's Community Corrections Week.
Oh.
And, you know, my hat was off to Community Corrections. Commissioner Morgan used to be involved with that quite heavily. And I think her tenure over there, she actually moved Community Corrections probably to the next higher level with her professionalism. And I want to thank you for giving up your position over there, coming over here. I also want to thank the people that showed up today. And, you know, the growers and that have concern about their investment and so on and so forth, they now recognize that there is a common, not an enemy out there, but a common concern amongst a bunch of them, that there's another group coming in here that's going to jeopardize their well-being. And I think they need to keep that up. I think one of my hopes was that at some point in time, that they would take ownership of the complaints, and it sounds to me like they are taking ownership of the complaints. They're not just saying, hey, that doesn't happen, and trying to shout people down anymore and bully their way through this situation. Because I commend them for that. So, you know, I think we're all going to get to work together on this thing. This isn't going to be an easy thing. It's not going to be done in 6 months. I think the state and the county have been coming back to reopen this issue many, many times before we get it all settled.
Anything else? Commissioner Morgan?
I do. I want to address where I was last week.
Oh.
The board had approved me attending a FEMA training on public information officer specifically to all hazards. So any big event that would occur in our community and have an impact, it was actually a very beneficial training to attend. FEMA does a great job. The resources that I obtained during that and just seeing how other communities actually interact, and FEMA covered the cost of the training, which was good. I also want to let you know I will not be here next week, and there's a very good reason. You heard me talk in the first 6 months, or the first 5 months before the levy, about why I think our juvenile justice department is important, and how if we invest into our children in this community, we save money in the long run because they're not going in the criminal justice system, or they're contributing members of society one day, that we would have to invest to get the outcome that we want. Next week, I'm going to be investing in 60 of our Josephine County foster kids by volunteering at the Royal Family Kids Camp that partners with our DHS Child Welfare Office here in Josephine County. And so it's once a year. It's an opportunity to just pour into these foster kids in a way that acknowledges them, lets them feel special, and just pour into their lives. And the end result is hoping that they don't repeat next generations having to go back in the system. And so if we can break some of these cycles. So it's not just something I thought of for other people to invest in. I'm also investing my time and energies as well into these kids. And so I thought it'd be important to let you all know that I will be taking part in that.
Great. Anything else? I was invited to attend a meeting with Secretary of Interior Zinke. Secretary of Interior oversees the Bureau of Land Management. The Secretary of Agriculture reviews and is overseeing the forestry, National Forest Service. And so that's the difference in who's administering. I'm interested in the Forest Service, but I'm more interested in the BLM. We have about 350,000 acres of BLM in Josephine County. There's 2.4 million acres that I talk about all the time having to do with ONC lands. Those are special lands that were set aside by Congress in 1937 for the benefit of the economies locally and to be put into permanent forest production for those economies in local rural 18 counties in Oregon. That was the real subject of what we were discussing on Sunday morning at the Jackson County Board of Commissioners office. There were six elected officials that were invited to attend. No, there were six members of county kind of focused, invited to attend by Congressman Walden, who was helping host the meeting over there. So it was a Klamath County Commissioner and Chair, Calumet Morris, Tim Freeman, Commissioner and President of the ONC Association for Douglas County, Craig Pope, who's the Secretary Treasurer and Chair of the Polk County Board of Commissioners, and Colleen Roberts, who's the Chair of the Jackson County Board of Commissioners and ONC Board Member, and then myself, who's the Chair of the Josephine County Board of Commissioners, but for that capacity, it was the Vice President of the ONC Association. So we spent about an hour, a little longer, and had a great discussion with the Secretary. I wanted to say that, you know, I'm bringing a perspective of forest management to the table, but it was not lost the special places that are provided for protection under the Antiquities Act and given discretion to the President to make those kind of set-asides. However, there are certain provisions that restrict his authority to do that, and the ONC Association believes that the ONC Act trumps the President's authority to make those designations, as Congress has already designated those plans for a specific purpose. That's the basis of our lawsuit. It's the basis of the conversation we had with the Secretary. It will all play out over time, regardless of the recommendation that Secretary Zinke has. We believe that that'll probably get refined by a judge's decision and in due time. So not debating the merits of the set-aside by the previous administration, that's not what really is on the table. I think it's a special place, but that's really not up to me. Congress is going to be trumping our position and the President's in that situation, as far as I'm aware. So as far as efficiency and expeditious meetings, we've gotten, we plowed through a lot of ground here today, but it frankly wasn't plowed, it was already plowed ground. We had talked about a lot of these subjects beforehand. I'm always looking for efficient ways to run things. We don't have forever to talk about every issue, and that's unfortunate, but that's just really the reality of it. Every time we spend, you know, a couple of hours talking about this, which is important, really it's important to hear from the citizens. Not in a repetitive way or a controversial way, it's just providing us input. What I like to do is concentrate on when is that input going to be recorded for the efficiency of actually developing land use laws. We're not developing a land use law here today. So talking about those elements are really not relevant. Really talking about the item number 2A is whether or not Josephine County should initiate this process to talk about it. And that's all we should be discussing. And so I think that if over time I can help set the stage for what exactly we are addressing here today, not the merits of whether or not, you know, this is better or that's better. No. Should we talk about it? That's what we were talking about here today, and refining the comments from both the citizens and on my side here too today will actually get us in and out that much quicker. So that's my goal as the chair, to try to get efficient meetings over in an expeditious time frame. So with that, at 11:49, the board is adjourned until tomorrow morning, probably at 9 o'clock. We're going to reconvene and talk about a whole host of different issues. Nothing further, we're adjourned.
Thank you. I'm getting my vocational at Rotary today, so
oh,
that's
yeah
part of why I was up.